Hey folks, Ben Birch here from White Rose Society. I don't usually interrupt your regularly scheduled programming, so I'll keep this brief. I am currently holding a fund drive to keep White Rose on the air. If you think what I do here is valuable, please visit our homepage at www.whiterosesociety.org and chip in to defray the substantial costs of this service. Thank you very much.
Cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Cammy McCormick.
We have 5 kids and one that's disabled.
Millions of auto workers and their families are hoping a deal can still be found to rescue the auto industry. And the White House still searching for options, as correspondent Mark Noller reports.
What the White House fears is that a collapse of the auto industry would further weaken and destabilize the economy. Press Secretary Dana Perino says it would be irresponsible to allow that to happen.
So the White House may tap bailout funds set aside for the financial industry. The latest economic reports show we're spending less at retail stores. November was the 5th straight decline in those numbers. Further evidence of the financial hardship so many Americans are facing, a growing number of homeless. Rabbi Marvin Gross is director of Union Station Homeless Services in Pasadena, California. All 150 of his beds are full.
Now the number is such that we have our own waiting list here, which is just a new twist. And I think it reflects the fact that there are a lot of people now on the edge of poverty and homelessness due to the downturn in the economy.
There are growing calls for the resignation of Illinois' Governor Rod Blagojevich. Craig Delamore reports one state official wants him stripped of power in the meantime.
Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan says while he is facing federal corruption charges, Governor Rod Blagojevich cannot take action on state contracts, health care funding, or even appointing a new U.S. senator with any legitimacy. So she's asked the state's high court to at least temporarily force the governor to step aside.
State government is paralyzed by a governor who is incapable of governing.
The governor has maintained his innocence. His chief of staff, who was also charged, has resigned. Craig Delamore, CBS News, Chicago.
Those remains found in Central Florida. We're still waiting to hear whether they belong to missing toddler Kaylee Anthony. CBS News correspondent Peter King joins us live from Orlando with the latest.
And Cammie, today's developments include release of the 911 tape.
This is Osage County Utilities Emergency Dispatch. We found a human skull.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
That call sent investigators into the woods quickly, and they're still there.
We may be there a few hours. We may be there a few days.
Deputy Carlos Padilla says they're looking for evidence.
Keep in mind that this is a heavily wooded area, a lot of undergrowth, a lot of brush.
As for the remains, the medical examiner's been examining them. Padilla says they could be sent to the FBI lab tonight. A positive ID could take as long as 2 weeks. Live in Orlando, Peter King, CBS News.
A Hollywood legend has died. Van Johnson, a heartthrob during Hollywood's golden era.
I like a Gershwin tune.
He could sing, and he could dance. And in the 1940s and 50s, Van Johnson was one of Hollywood's top stars. He appeared in numerous films. In this 1946 film, Easy to Wed, Johnson played opposite Lucille Ball.
Let us down the sweet draft of Bacchus.
What's that?
That's Shakespeare from bottoms up.
In later years, Van Johnson appeared in numerous theatrical productions, including Broadway's La Cage aux Folles. Steve Futterman, CBS News, Los Angeles.
Johnson was 92. This is CBS News.
Truck on the right, no signs in sight. Which lane to take? Can't make mistake. Which way to go? Too many roads. Exit almost missed. Need lane assist. Get a Nuvi. Change lanes with ease. With lane assist, exits you won't miss. Nuvi knows the road, knows where to go. Navigation tool, even saves you fuel.
Give a Garmin.
Give a Garmin.
Nuvi keeps you sane, ends driving pains. Garmin.com, Garmin.com.
Give a Garmin Nuvi with lane assist.
You're a small business person, so you're the buyer, the seller, the bean counter, the chief cook, and the bottle washer. You know your best new business comes from your current customers. But what's the best way to reach them? ConstantContact.com, the easy, effective email marketing service. Constant Contact gives you professional online newsletters fast, without any technical skills. Plus, there's a free 60-day trial and plans as low as $15 a month. ConstantContact.com, the smart way to build your business.
The mental and physical abuse inflicted on detainees in Iraq, Afghanistan, and Guantanamo. A bipartisan Senate committee said today the interrogators were just following orders.
This report blames Bush administration policies and says the interrogation techniques used by the CIA and military were directly adapted from training for preparing special forces to face enemies that torture. Kenneth Roth is with Human Rights Watch.
The Armed Services Committee report shows that Rumsfeld and other top officials, as a matter of policy, authorized harsh interrogation technique, which frankly bordered on torture and inhumane treatment.
And this bipartisan report links policies implemented after 9/11, legal memos on torture, and interrogation changes with abuse at Iraq's Abu Ghraib prison. Steve Kathan, CBS News.
More than a million homes in the Northeast are without power today due to an ice storm, one of the worst in decades in states like New Hampshire and Oregon and Washington State, preparing for what may be their first winter storm. I'm Cammie McCormick, CBS News.
How to really stuff a stocking. Step 1, go to the Home Depot. Step 2, get a Ryobi One Plus cordless tool free, up to an $89 value when you buy any Ryobi 18-volt combo kit for someone special on your list. Step 3, consider picking up a bigger stocking.
Great holiday offers and special buys only at the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. U.S. only through December 31st. See store for details.
Hey guys, it's time to do a little Christmas shopping for yourself. It's Van Heusen Week at the men's store inside JCPenney. Get 50 to 60% off Van Heusen sports shirts and sweaters, and save 40% on all Van Heusen dress shirts. Plus, JCPenney has Van Heusen ties for only $21.99. Great deals on belts, too. If you want your gifts done right, do it yourself during Van Heusen Week. The men's store makes it easy to get in, find it, and get out. JCPenney.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
Welcome to another fresh edition of the Peter B. Collins Show. I'm your humble host behind the microphone here in San Francisco. Wherever you are, however you're listening, welcome. Lots to talk about, great people to talk with today again. And a shout out to our brand new affiliate, AM 1510, The Zone in Boston. Dumping our program into New England with 50,000 watts. We love that. I got more DVDs to give away to new callers, first-time callers from the Boston area. And if you've received a DVD, it went in the mail today, so look for it before Christmas.
Ready, steady, go.
Our toll-free number is available to you right now throughout the program, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. And before we start the program, I'd just like to acknowledge that it's been a rough year. Not just for the average American, but for your humble host at the Peter B. Collins Show. The economy's been rough on us, and many listeners have stepped up to help, and I really appreciate it. If you go to our website, there's a fresh message under the tab, You Can Help. And we have a free gift offer if you want to support us. Check it out at peterbcollins.com. Again, the tab is called You Can Help. And if you want to drop me a note, my mailing address is Box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942. Box 100, Mill Valley, California, 94942. Coming up later this hour, we'll talk about the bailout bill backwards that was rejected by the U.S. Senate. The White House now saying, well, after refusing to even consider using part of the $700 billion bailout fund, they're saying, well, we might be able to do that. So it's interesting to see what brinksmanship produces. And we'll talk about the bailout with Phil Angelides. He's the former state treasurer of California, now head of the Apollo Alliance. And he's got some ideas about the forthcoming green economy. I want to see if he's been at the table for any of these discussions. Next hour, we're going to spend the hour talking about mercenaries in Iraq. Steve Fenaru is a longtime reporter. He worked for the Boston Globe and writes for the Washington Post these days. His new book, Big Boy Rules, is powerful
and touching in many ways, about the role of paid gunmen, that's right, military contractors, who are accountable to almost nobody in Iraq. And we've seen that brought into sharp relief with the arraignment this week of five Blackwater employees after the Nisour Square incident. Also on today's program, Brad Friedman from Brad Blog checks in to talk about election issues. Al Franken's election has not been decided, but he's gotten a big break. Some of those uncounted absentee ballots apparently will be counted. And Brad's also got an update on the Diebold failure in Humboldt County that we talked about last week in our election protection segment. Again, my number is 888-5-PETER-B, and you can always email me, peter@peterbcollins.com. Robert Perry is a longtime investigative reporter. He publishes now at consortiumnews.com. His most recent book that he co-authored with two of his sons is called Neck Deep, The Disastrous Presidency of George W. Bush. Bob Perry, how are you doing today?
Good, Peter. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing okay. There's just so much to talk about, so much going on. I wanted to start off with the important report that came out of the United States Senate this week, affirming what we've known. Anybody who's read Philippe Sand's book called Torture Team or any of the other accounts of the origins of the torture policies that were imposed at Abu Ghraib and also at Guantanamo Bay and other locations in the American Gulag, we are now getting very clear readings that the Senate investigation shows that top brass, including Donald Rumsfeld, are directly responsible for our breach from the Geneva Conventions and the standards of international law and the way they tried to redefine torture so that they could do it and say that we don't. And I think that this should lead to a very important criminal investigation. Do you think that might happen?
Well, I'm not sure it will happen, but I do think what's important here is that the myth that there were a few bad apples at Abu Ghraib, the night shift getting out of hand, was false. We now know, we've known this for a while, I suppose, but based on the Senate Armed Services Committee report, which was not challenged by the 12 Republicans on the committee, what we have is that there was this essentially a narrative that went back to early 2002. When there was discussion in the White House about how to handle detainees in the war on terror, and George Bush issued a crucial action memorandum in February of 2002, which essentially excluded detainees from protections under the Geneva Conventions. And with that, and then with the later meetings by the so-called Principles Committee, made up of top officials under President Bush, including Vice President Cheney, Secretary of State Powell, National Security Advisor Rice, Rumsfeld, and Attorney General Ashcroft, that this and CIA Director George Tenet, that this group then essentially decided what could be done, how far people could go, and that led to some of the abuses we saw at Guantanamo. And after the invasion of Iraq in 2003 and the emergence of the insurgency in 2004, those basic concepts were then transferred over to Iraq and used against Iraqi detainees, leading to the Abu Ghraib and other scandals.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think this is a very important set of issues. I think it's a barbaric chapter in American history, and we need to close it. And I was troubled by the comments from a man who is the Democratic chairman of the House Intelligence Committee, Texas Congressman Sylvester Reyes, who said, well, we don't want to be known as a nation that tortures, but we got to keep some flexibility to keep the nation safe. There's some ugly terrorists out there. And I'm feeling a little twisted here as we see the Obama administration moving forward to close Guantanamo Bay and a leading Democrat saying, well, hold on here a minute. We might need to torture a few people down the road.
Well, there are basically three schools of thought that are competing for President-elect Obama's attention. One is that, and this is not an insignificant group within his circle, there are people that do want to go and prosecute people who are guilty of these crimes. These are war crimes. These are very serious. They're grotesque felonies. And there are people who do want to do that. There's another school, which is sort of circling around the Hillary Clinton faction over the state, and they feel that, well, the election was punishment enough, that President Bush is going into retirement in disgrace, essentially, and it would be bad for the country to continue to deal with some of those old issues. So there's that school. And then there's a school that Congressman Reyes apparently is representing, another part of the Democratic Party, with no doubt, as well as some Republicans, who feel that, well, these kinds of harsh tactics are needed and that they should continue under the Obama administration. So those are the three basic groups, and it's not clear which one will prevail at this point. Right now, I guess I'd be betting on the second group that just wants to sort of let bygones be bygones. They seem to be in the ascendancy, but there are some strong elements who want to see some real accountability.
Robert Perry with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Visit his site, consortiumnews.com. They've got their fall fundraiser underway, and if you can help out, I would really appreciate it. They do great work there, consortiumnews.com. Now, Bob, one thing that you've been writing about is the risk that Obama faces that his post-partisanship gambit will fail. And I share that concern. I think that this is a somewhat naive and idealistic effort on the part of the president-elect to assume that the partisan Republicans will lay down their arms and work together to solve the crushing problems that this nation faces. And we've seen a snapshot in the past 10 days as the Republicans have really split with the White House and the Democratic leadership over any kind of financial aid for Detroit. And you've probably heard that I have my own misgivings about it, but it has boiled down to a very partisan assault on organized labor. And in the final debates in the Senate this week, that became very clear with Jim DeMint and Richard Shelby making the case. And so I'm just curious if you think that Obama's getting the message and that the Republicans are not going to play nice with him.
I'm not sure he has. I mean, people have been delivering that message to him, and not just through us in the press, but also more directly. And he seems to be oblivious to it. He seems to want to do what Bill Clinton tried to do in early 93, which is to show this sort of bipartisan open hand to the Republicans. And that just doesn't recognize who the National Republicans have become. And on Thursday night, with the shooting down of the auto bailout bill, what you saw there was almost it seems to me to be an effort to kill the Obama presidency in its cradle. That to sort of start him off with a situation where you might have 10% or higher unemployment, essentially a deindustrialized economy, an auto industry that is effectively shut down. And if that were the case, a lot of what Obama would like to do might be shut down as well, and that could then play for the Republicans in 2010, where they would say, "See, Obama's failed." So much like you saw in '93 when the Republicans voted unanimously against Bill Clinton's budget, if you remember, every Republican, House and Senate, voted against Bill Clinton's budget, tried to kill that presidency right at the start, and Democrats actually had to walk the plank in some cases to get that budget through. Some lost their seats because of that vote.
I remember.
And I think we were now seeing kind of a replay, except the stakes are now aimed at the auto industry. So I think if Obama thought he got some goodwill by keeping Bobby Gates on a defense or something, the Republicans are showing him how much that counted.
Yeah. And the other thing from Reyes is he's counseling Obama to hold over Mike McConnell and Mike Hayden, the two top spooks.
Right, that's sort of freaking out some of my friends from the CIA, who were dissidents at the agency and who have been very concerned about the prostitution of the CIA's analytical product in particular, as well as the agency's role in torture and other abuses. But it does seem that at least the thinking is that Obama will not do that. But it is significant that the Democratic chairman of the House Intelligence Committee is recommending it.
Has Reyes been talking to Joe Lieberman lately? I mean, what's going on there? I just don't get it, Bob. We're going to take a break and return. Robert Perry, P-A-R-R-Y, from ConsortiumNews.com with us. If you have a question or comment, bring it on. We'll talk with you. Toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. You've got the Peter B. Collins Show.
We at at KRXA 540 would like to take this opportunity to wish you and your loved ones the very best during this holiday season. From all of us to all of you, happy holidays.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you. And because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
House and protect your investment. Custom painting. Call Don Dickman Painting for a free estimate. Don Dickman Painting, serving Monterey Peninsula and the Big Sur Coast. Quality paint jobs and green painting solutions are fast and affordable. Call 667-2144. For a free estimate, call 667-2144. That's 667-2144. I'm Don Dickman. When quality counts, let us protect your investment. You're in good hands.
With Don Dickman Painting.
We're at www.dondickmanpainting.com.
The patient's not responding to the treatment.
I know. That imaginary jingle telling him to go where again?
Coffeetopia.
I've seen this condition before. It is very contagious.
What happened?
Nothing really. Everyone had a cup of coffee and a bagel. Speaking of which, let's go have a cup.
Where should we go?
Coffee, coffee, coffeetopia.
What was that?
And so, it begins again.
For the best coffee, tea, or smoothies in the Monterey Bay Area, visit Coffeetopia. With three locations in Santa Cruz, 3701 Portola Drive near Pleasure Point, 1723 Mission Street on the west side, and the newest Coffeetopia at 1443 Capitola Road in the Live Oak area. Coffeetopia is also the oldest internet cafe in Santa Cruz, with wireless and by-the-minute computer stations. Other places use ice as fillers for their smoothies, but not Coffeetopia. They use all fruit and juices when making their delicious smoothies, and they also feature tropical, high-energy, acai smoothies, bagels, and fresh baked goods.
Coffee, coffee, Coffeetopia.
Hey, it's Sheila Gale here to tell you about Monta Vista Wine and Spirits on Soledad Drive in Monterey. It's family-owned for over 40 years. They have all the best wines. It's the real deal. With a high-end liquor selection, it's all there. And if you have a special request, they'll take care of it for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits is open every day 9 to 9. Call ahead. Your order will be waiting for you. Monta Vista Wine and Spirits, 19 Soledad Drive by Del Monte Center in Monterey. Reminds you to please drink responsibly. Robbins Jewelry in Carmel is open every day for your holiday and gift shopping. Robbins Jewelry is one of a kind, unique, and stylish. She uses sterling silver and semi-precious stones and will customize a keepsake right there on the spot. Robin is a native Carmel artist and silversmith. She's located inside the Dowd Craft Studio at Ocean and San Carlos. Robin has a big selection of organic bling. Great jewelry that's affordable. With free engraving and gift wrapping, go to Robbins Jewelry in Carmel.
Come around, up to no good. Broke the old treaties cause he could. Struts all around like a hood. Got us in a world of trouble. Put him in a straitjacket, there's no doubt. Let the psychiatrist figure him out. Listen while the demonstrators cheer and shout. We'll all feel better in the morning.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show. 39 days or so of still President Bush. We're talking with Robert Perry from ConsortiumNews.com. And Bob posted a piece on December 11th called A Time Machine to Save America. It's a wistful look back over the last 8 years. And what a wild ride it's been. Bob, first up, you don't trade in gossip, but I got to ask you this. I've been hearing repeated rumors that Bush has started drinking again and that Pisco Sours appear to be some favorite indulgence of his. Do you have any information there in Washington that's credible?
Well, I'm not sure it's credible. I mean, certainly those rumors have been active for some time. And clearly President Bush has not been very functional.
Yeah, I've noticed him. He has seemed impaired at some of his public appearances recently.
Well, obviously, he must look back at this, and even though there has been an element of delusion to his entire approach to the world for the longest time, it seems like he has to recognize that he is going down as one of the worst presidents ever, if not the worst ever. I think he should maybe trademark that, the worst president ever, TM. But, I mean, that can't make you feel very good. And you also look back at the people who've died for no particular reason, because it's after your hubris and arrogance and bad calculations. And, I think whoever you are, even if you're someone as out of touch as President Bush often seems to be, that has to eat away at you. So if he's not drinking, he certainly has a lot of reasons to be.
Yeah. So your piece takes a look at if we could fire up a time machine with the trillions of dollars that we're investing in this messed up economy, that, we could try to rewrite history. And you go back to the dark days, post-election 2000, when we were glued to our TV sets and watching Florida intently, waiting for the U.S. Supreme Court to decide our election. And you retrace that ground very well, and I want people to go to your site and read the piece. But as you look back, what are some of those critical moments that Americans may have lost sight of or just lost touch with?
Well, certainly December 12th, which is the 8th anniversary of the Supreme Court decision, perhaps one of the most infamous decisions that will go into American history, that the so-called the Bush v. Gore decision, which was outlandish. It was simply a way to put George W. Bush into the White House without any real legal reasoning, just that the Republicans, the five of them anyway, wanted to do that.
Mm-hmm.
And the piece goes through the fact that they're even different. They even flipped their reasoning as they went through the process. Although they kept the verdict, Bush was going to win, but they went from one extreme on reasoning to the opposite extreme. They didn't seem to care, these five Republicans. They were just determined to put Bush in and find some legal language to throw around that. And it's an extraordinary moment. We've never seen a Supreme Court stop the counting of American votes and decide an election this way. And we now know that if all the legally cast votes, we're not talking about the butterfly ballots and the ones that were spoiled, but just the legally cast votes where the intent of the voter was discernible, Al Gore would have won. He would have won because the overvotes, the ones that were where his name was both punched through and written in,
mm-hmm.
those fell heavily for Gore. And so whatever you did with the various kinds of chads, dimpled, punched through, or whatever, Gore would have become president of the United States.
And
so it's a pretty remarkable. If you could go back that 8 years and convince Sandra Day O'Connor and Anthony Kennedy to just extend the vote count a bit, because their theory was that there had to be a full and fair recount for this to be right, but then they gave the state 2 hours to carry that out, which, mm-hmm. of course, it couldn't do. So, therefore, ergo, Bush became president. But if they had simply said, give them a week, let them actually do as full and fair accounting as possible, Al Gore should have become president, and he probably would have become president, and a lot of what happened in the last 8 years might well not have happened.
And, Bob, I always recall the contrast of James Baker, who was there as the gunslinger for the Bush family, take no prisoners, a kind of Al Davis, just win, baby, approach. And Warren Christopher, on behalf of the Gore campaign, was in this gentlemanly, diplomatic approach. And I also think that the Gore team sharply miscalculated by not demanding a full recount. They thought they could get away with a few key counties and that would suffice.
Well, they first wanted a full recount. Then the Bush people blocked that or refused it. Then they tried for some various cities or key sections.
Mm-hmm.
But then the state Supreme Court said basically a full state recount. But then there was the question whether the overvote should be put in. They probably would have been if the state had allowed us to proceed anyway.
Yeah.
But then the U.S. Supreme Court said the overvote should be in, but they didn't give enough time for the actual votes to be counted.
Robert Perry, thank you very much, Bob.
Thank you.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
The Osgood File, sponsored in part by Home Medics. Get the perfect holiday gift. Affordable luxuries they'll enjoy all year round. Home Medics heated shiatsu massages starting at just $49.99 at retailers nationwide. I'm Charles Osgood. Here's something unusual. Debt levels in this country have dropped. That is quite true, says David Weiss, chief economist at Standard & Poor's.
Debt levels have dropped for the first time in the history of the Federal Reserve's flow of funds series. Not by much, but down is unique.
That would be great news if it meant that we Americans have mended our prolific ways and are now saving for a rainy day. If you don't think it's a rainy day, just look out the window. But that's not what it means, says Weiss.
We're in hock up to our little eyeballs. And frankly, we've got to start getting our head more above water. It does require saving more, spending less, and borrowing less.
So why aren't we borrowing?
Americans are getting nervous. They're not buying houses, they're not buying cars, and therefore they don't have to borrow the money to do it.
More numbers games after this. In these stressful times, we're all looking for holiday gifts that will not only be appreciated all year long, but are also practical and affordable. Home Medics works wonders this holiday season with a full line of shiatsu massages with heat starting at just $49.99. The one I have is the Shiatsu One. It is just terrific, let me tell you. It has both back and shoulder massagers that feel like a professional masseur with four hands. No appointment needed, though, and no big pricey massaging chair either. You can use it with any chair in the house. If there's any gift more perfect to give or to get this season than Shiatsu One, I sure haven't seen it. The Home Medics Shiatsu Massaging Back Cushion is truly state-of-the-art. It's earned the Good Housekeeping Seal. You deserve one. So does someone you care about. Home Medics, the leaders in massage innovation. Available at retailers everywhere or at homemedics.com. Some distressed homeowners have been able to refinance their mortgages. The Office of the Comptroller of the Currency has taken a look at the numbers, though.
What these numbers do for the first time is say, whatever they're doing, it doesn't seem to be working as well as anyone would hope.
In fact, says CBS News business correspondent Anthony Mason.
The study from the Office of the Comptroller of the Currency found that during the first half of the year, among people who had their loans modified, that more than a third already had fallen behind within the first 3 months, and that by 6 months, more than half of the people were in default. So that's not a good record.
To say the least. Mason spoke with Bruce Marks of the Neighborhood Assistance Corporation of America.
They put people in mortgages that were structured to fail. They're putting them into solutions that are structured to fail.
Otherwise, the delinquency problem just continues.
And it will get massive. It will continue and get much, much worse.
The Osgood File. Transcripts, podcasts, and MP3s are available at theosgoodfile.com. I'm Charles Osgood on the CBS Radio Network.
Wide open, Robinson for a three off the inbound. Two for two, Nathan Robinson. Four on three up the left side. Jamal Boykin, the open floor. Goes in and Viney and scores.
This is the voice of the Golden Bears, Roxy Bernstein, inviting you to join us for another exciting season of Cal basketball right here on your home. For the Bears.
The Cal Bears will host a home game with Nevada on Saturday, December 20th. Pregame at 2:30, tip off at 3, here on KRXA 540.
Every night, Jack Thomas camps out on a cold, lonely street corner. Tonight, some people almost brought him something to eat. Someone almost drove him to a shelter. Another almost brought him a warm blanket. And Jack Thomas, well, he almost made it through the night. Sometimes instead of giving, we almost give. But that's the same as not giving at all. Don't almost give. Give. Visit don'talmostgive.org. A message from the Ad Council.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show, infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
The Republican senators who've blocked a rescue package for Detroit certainly are taking care of business, but not American business. They're taking care of Toyota, Mercedes, BMW, and Honda, because they have assembly lines in right-to-work states represented by Republican senators. It's boiled down to an ugly union-busting attempt by corporate interests and the Republicans. Minutes into the hour, Phil Angelides returns to our program today. He served two terms as treasurer of the state of California. Before that, he was the chair of the Democratic Party here in the Golden State, and he is a longtime builder. Some people use that pejorative, developer, but Phil has built homes and communities in California, and I think he's well poised for his new assignment at the Apollo Alliance. And if you've not heard of that or don't know enough about it, go to their website at apolloalliance.org. Phil, welcome to the program today.
It's great to be with you, as always, Peter.
Well, we've got some tough issues to chew over today. I want to get your thoughts about the way the Senate balked at passing a rescue package for Detroit.
Yeah, I think it's problematic. Hey, look, the fact is that unfortunately the auto companies didn't make the changes they needed to make. You know, for 30 years they fought fuel efficiency standards. They dug in their heels. They, built cars that were big gas guzzlers. They did not retool themselves for the coming green economy in the 21st century. That having been said, I believe the right thing to do would be to extend a bridge loan so that we can stabilize this economy right now and not set off a cascade of job losses at the very time when the economy is teetering on the edge. And I thought it was particularly telling that this bill was blocked by Republicans who were concerned about middle class wages and about the wages, when they haven't uttered a peep for the last 8 years about the tens of millions of dollars that were being made by the executives, and they didn't utter one peep when Hank Paulson moved $300 billion to the big banks and financial institutions in this country.
Right.
But look, I hope that
well, there aren't any unions at Citibank.
No, there aren't. And so, my hope is that, look, the fact is Detroit's got to retool and got to get with it. And that means management. That means labor. And they've got to produce competitive cars. There's no question about that. And they've got to produce energy-efficient cars. But we can do that here in America. You know, when World War II started, America had a horse-drawn artillery. Within 3 years and 8 months, we had the most powerful military in the world. And in fact, Detroit went to work in World War II making the kind of vehicles America needed for that war.
Mm-hmm.
The assembly lines were shut down as Detroit's assembly lines went into production to make the vehicles to win the war against fascism. What we need to do is we need to retool those assembly lines today to win the war against oil dependency and against climate change and against a faltering economy.
Well, Phil Angelides, if you'll indulge me for a moment, I've been sharing with people like you a proposal that I have fashioned with the help of many of my listeners who call into the program. And I believe the best thing that we could do for Detroit-based auto manufacturers is order cars. Order cars that we want. Order cars or other vehicles that meet our specifications, not theirs. And I would say, to stimulate Detroit, let's order 50,000 cars. And we want a percentage of them to be high mileage, high miles per gallon, gasoline-based. We want hybrids. We want plug-in hybrids. And I want General Motors to dust off the plans from the electric car that they shelved just a few years ago and put that back on the market and induce Americans through rebates or tax breaks to buy those vehicles. I think that's the healthiest way that we could put Detroit on a firmer financial footing with a direction forward, propelling forward toward the green economy that you so artfully describe.
Yeah, look, I think, well, first of all, I think there's many opportunities to do that across the country. You know, public agencies buy fleets of vehicles. They ought to be buying the most fuel-efficient vehicles. And we as consumers have got to change our habit. I mean, the fact is Detroit comes in for the blame, but also you had American consumers buying vehicles that are now going to be obsolete in this new era when, even though gas prices are down right now, everyone knows that over time they're going to be rising. And so, look, there's a retooling that's required here across the whole economy, which brings me, Peter, to the moment we're in. You know, we are at the convergence of these enormous challenges.
Mm-hmm.
The country being dependent on foreign oil, we send, depending on the price of oil, $400 to $700 billion overseas each year. Our riches being transferred, one of the most massive wealth transfers ever, feeding regimes, many of which are deeply hostile to our values.
Mm-hmm.
We have the real threat of climate change, and of course now we have an economy in desperate free fall. And there is an answer to this. And President-elect Obama sees it, and that is to stimulate this economy not just by sending out checks to people, but by strategically investing in the new economy of America, the green economy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's very clear that when we have a new Congress take office in the first week of January, when President Obama takes office January 20th, there's going to be a very serious effort to stimulate this economy. And at the Apollo Alliance now, we have been calling for some time for an Apollo-like mission to convert America to a clean energy, good jobs economy.
Mm-hmm.
We called for the adoption, and you and I talked about it, of the new Apollo program, a 10-year, $500 billion investment initiative to create this clean energy, good jobs, made in American economy. And now what we are working hard to do is make sure that we put in place as part of President Obama's stimulus package, something we call the Apollo Economic Recovery Act, which is $50 billion to stimulate the economy by creating green-collar jobs all over America. And we think if we do this right, Peter, we can create 650,000 green-collar jobs in the next 2 years in this country, and we can do that by retrofitting buildings to be more energy efficient. We can do that by providing incentives to the renewable energy industry. We can weatherize homes across this country. We can start building the smart grid that conveys electricity efficiently across this country. We can invest $6 billion in ready-to-go public transit projects that will give urban dwellers options to move around and put people to work right away. So this is a tough time, but it's a time of opportunity to finally make that change to a green economy that we wanted to do and we need to do now.
And there are details on this proposal at the Apollo Alliance website, apolloalliance.org. There are two additional points I see here. One is to increase the appropriation for the Green Jobs Act of 2007 up to $250 million per year to provide job training and workforce investment in energy efficiency. And I would earmark some of that money for auto workers, not only the members of the UAW, they're important to me, but also the non-union workers who are part of the parts supply chain that is likely to be impacted by a downturn in auto manufacturing in this country. And the final point is a $300 million a year fund for the Clean Energy Service Corps. Tell us a little bit about this idea, Phil.
Well, here's the idea, and great American idea. We've done it time and time again, which is to create a civilian service program to give young people and senior citizens across this country the chance to give back to their country and help build the new energy-efficient economy by making low-income homes more energy-efficient all across, to go into our communities across America and to go into neighborhoods and to go to the homes of the elderly, and let's rebuild American homes and communities and businesses to be more energy efficient. It's in the spirit of AmeriCorps. It's in the spirit of VISTA and of the Peace Corps. We believe that we can put 25,000 young adults to work in this country, give them a great experience in national service in this war to convert to a clean energy economy, and we believe we can mobilize 200,000 seniors to serve their communities and to be part of building this new clean energy economy. It really is about a, in a sense, a Habitat for Humanity on a large scale, and this is Habitat for America's clean energy future.
I think it's a great idea.
And I want to say, I think what we need to do at this moment is we need to invest in hardware. That's renewable energy, fixing up our grid. That'll put people to work. Fixing up our buildings to make them more energy efficient. That'll reduce energy bills and put our people to work. But we also, I think you said it, we need to train our workers for this new economy. An interesting thing is happening all over the Midwest right now. Wind turbine manufacturing plants are opening up.
Mm-hmm.
The component plants that manufacture the components of renewable energy, they're opening up. And interesting enough, in a lot of places, the companies say they're struggling to find workers, even though unemployment in many communities in the Midwest is 8 and 10%. It's because we need to match these new employers to the workforce. We need to train the workforce for this new industry. We need to do what America does best when we're under stress, and that is get to work. We got a war to win, and this happens to be a war against oil dependency and climate change. We can win it.
Phil,
I want to say something that I think is important, though.
Go ahead.
It's very clear that President-elect Obama is committed to these goals. Very clear that there's leadership in Congress that wants to move in this direction. But it is never done till it is done. And what we need to build is a broad movement to urge Congress to move on this agenda quickly. We're hopeful that the first piece of this, the Apollo Economic Recovery Act, to put $50 billion of investment into the green economy, can be passed by Congress when they come back the first week of January and be on President Obama's desk on January 20th after he is sworn in. But we need support for that, so I'd like to ask everyone to go to our website at apolloalliance.org, sign up for our organization so you can get our emails, our mobilization calls, and endorse the Apollo Economic Recovery Act. We've seen with this auto bailout that nothing is sure in Congress unless you fight for it and you win it. You know, Peter, in the depths of the Depression, Franklin Roosevelt said he knew what he had to do, and he turned to his advisors. He said, "I know what I have to do now. Make me go do it."
Yep.
What we have to do is build the movement so that President Obama has the support to carry his agenda forward.
Phil Angelides with us here on the Peter B. Collins Show. Phil, just a minute till our next break. Have you or others who have the vision for the green economy been in any way involved in the discussions for the bailout for Detroit that didn't make the grade?
Well, what we have been doing is talking to policymakers. We worked very hard with Senator Stabenow in the fall to help put together the $25 billion in loan guarantees to retool Detroit for the new fuel-efficient vehicle era. And in this instance, we have been doing what we can to really focus on converting the industry to the new green economy. That's really been our focus, and that's really where we've, you know, put our emphasis.
Because I've just been disappointed that the package really didn't reflect the opportunities that you just described. It's really a short-term Band-Aid.
I think you have to look at two things. I mean, I do give credit to, for example, Speaker Pelosi and Majority Leader Reid. They saw this as a bridge financing just so bills could get paid in December and January, but I don't think there was any question that their real policy emphasis was a reorganization of this company so they delivered a new kind of vehicle.
But the package basically instructed the so-called car czar to either restructure these companies or force them into bankruptcy by spring. And I just really don't like to see a package where it looks like taxpayers are going to be providing the funding so that the executives can lay off more workers and shut down more plants, Phil.
Well, I agree on that score, and I will just say this. I have a lot of faith that in how many days now, Peter?
It's about 39.
Yeah, thank you for counting for me. That the key thing was to get through this critical period so the real work could begin January 20th.
We'll continue in just a moment. Phil Angelides, he's the new head of the Apollo Alliance. Visit their website, apolloalliance.org. You got a question? I want to hear it. Call me now, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8255. The Peter B. Collins Show, produced in San Francisco by Katrina Rill. Nick Tanum is taking your calls today.
Hey, this is Stephanie Miller. You're listening to the station that encourages you to think for yourself. What a concept. AM 540 KRXA.
Hi, this is Cynthia.
And this is Paul at the Pilgrim's Way Community Bookstore.
Have you heard about the events at Pilgrim's Way in the Secret Garden? Maybe too late? Our events include workshops, lectures, and book signings by recognizable and well-known authors locally, nationally, and internationally on a wide range of topics.
Don't miss another chance. You can receive Pilgrim's Way event announcements personally by going to pilgrimsway.com and click on Events to subscribe to the private email service listed. An event calendar is also posted on the Pilgrim's Way community bulletin board inside the bookstore for your convenience. Support independence. Come in and pick up a free KRXA bumper sticker. We're on Dolores Street between 5th and 6th in downtown Carmel.
Or give us a call at 624-4955.
This is the Media Matters Minute. I'm Brandon Hirsch. Our top item today, several members of the media echoed Republican accusations that the United Auto Workers Union killed the auto bailout package.
The deal fell apart because the Auto Workers Union refused to give in to Republican demands to reduce workers' wages.
In fact, a compromise bailout bill supported by the UAW and the White House passed the House, but later deadlocked when Senate Republicans demanded steep cuts in pay and benefits by the United Auto Workers Union, despite union concessions in 2005 and 2007. But the most ridiculous comment of the day goes to Fox News' Gretchen Carlson on the spirit of Christmas.
This is a time to be tolerant of people of all religions.
Oh, go please. Ahead.
You know, you got to be tolerant of
I am
people.
Tolerant. I'm all for free speech and free rights, just not on December 25th.
For these stories and more, visit MediaMatters.org. And while you're there, don't forget to vote on this year's most outrageous commentary.
Central Coast Running in Santa Cruz is the number one headquarters for runners. Whether you're a novice or a serious competitor, Central Coast Running has everything you need, from shoes to sportswear. Locally owned and operated by UC Santa Cruz cross-country coach Adam Booth, Central Coast Running should be your first stop before you run.
Hi, this is Adam Booth, local running coach and owner of CCR in Santa Cruz. We're always in the giving mood at the store. Bring your old running shoes in for us to recycle, and you'll get 5% off a new pair or a free pair of socks. We've also partnered with Toys for Tots and Finish Line Productions to bring you the first annual holiday toy 5K run and walk on December 14th, the same weekend as our holiday sale. The race starts at the store and travels down the river trail towards the boardwalk. Bring a toy to donate, and your entry is just $20. Enter at Central Coast Running or online at active.com. Help us help others this holiday season.
Central Coast Running, located in the Gateway Plaza near the corner of Highway 1 and River Street in Santa Cruz, or visit them online at centralcoastrunning.com.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 8 minutes in front of the hour. My guest is Phil Angelides. He's the former state treasurer of California, now heading the Apollo Alliance. Their website has a lot of great information about the forthcoming green economy. Go to apolloalliance.org. Phil, tell me your thoughts about Barack Obama's selection of Stephen Chu from the Lawrence Berkeley Laboratories to be energy secretary.
I like it. From what I know, I don't know Dr. Chu. But everything I read, I like. I'm very impressed with the strength of the team and its commitment to building this new clean energy economy. I mean, here's what I think the big challenge is. The big challenge now is to make sure that the president's boldness, the desire of this country for a fundamental shift in our economy, so we move away from oil to this new green economy. Our real challenge is to make sure that these bold ideas become reality. And what we've seen is that, you know, that bold ideas can get chopped into pieces in the paralysis of Washington and Congress. And so what's really going to be required here is a broad popular movement to say that the time is now. And there's never been, of course, a better time given the condition of our economy. So, Peter, we're very excited about the appointees that are emerging from President-elect Obama in the clean energy, economic and environmental space. But we all have work to do. And it's to be good allies with the new administration and building the support needed to make this change. And as a matter of fact, Peter, we are planning a mission to Washington January 13th and 14th, where we're going to take leaders from labor, the environmental movement, the business community, social justice organizations from around this country, and we're going to descend on the Capitol and make it clear that while all of us come from different walks of life, labor leaders, business leaders, environmental leaders, we are all committed to this idea of a clean energy economy, creating jobs here at home, and also making sure, I want to just tell you, as importantly as anything else, that as we create this new economy, it's different from the old one, not only in that it uses clean energy, but that it creates jobs where people get paid enough to support their families with dignity.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a big plus to this new green economy. So much of what needs to be done are jobs here at home, retrofitting our homes, building public transit systems, building the component parts of renewable energy, things that must be done in America and that will pay good wages for our people.
Now, Phil, you're a political critter, and I want to get your thoughts on how to deal...
I'm a statesman, Peter.
Oh, excuse me. You've got a great political mind. We'll put it that way. We've seen, just in this past week, how the Republicans have peeled off. They don't even support the lame duck White House. And we've got Shelby, DeMint, and McConnell from right-to-work states with foreign auto manufacturing interests. And then we got Senator Inhofe from Oklahoma or wherever he's from, who is just a deep denier about climate change. And we have seen them get very partisan and very anti-union in this debate over a rescue package for Detroit. And I'm concerned that the post-partisanship that Barack Obama dreams of will never occur, and that this lack of a love fest this week in Washington is a key indicator of that.
Well, look, it's going to be tough, which is why we have to build the broad movement of support. And I really believe in my heart that if we do our job, if people go to our website and look at the Apollo Economic Recovery Act, and if you like it, you sign on as a supporter and you help us mobilize people across this country. If we make our voices heard, given the makeup of the new Congress and the new Senate, we're going to have a chance to get this agenda done. Because, look, there's always going to be people who dig their feet in. Big Oil is going to do everything they can do to, you know, gum up the works. But this is an extraordinary moment. Unemployment is heading potentially to double digits in this country. We have record foreclosures. We have a financial system in paralysis.
California is about ready to hit the wall financially. We may have to shut down construction projects before Christmas, and the state may run out of money by February.
The real question is, how are we going to get this economy moving again? And investments in the green economy, in retrofitting buildings, in building renewable energy, in building public transit, in redoing our grid, they're America's best path to economic prosperity. And I'm confident that if we do our job, there'll be a good majority in the House, and I believe we can get 60 votes in the Senate to move this agenda. Look, we're not going to get the Inhofes of the world, but the fact is that there are between the new Democratic majorities and some Republicans who understand the severity of where this country sits, I believe the real possibility is there.
All right, let's get a comment from Catherine in Monterey. Go ahead, Catherine. You're on with Peter B. and Phil Angelides.
And I like the sound of the program that you're describing, but I really am so tired of hearing the rhetoric of the past in the terms that you use and fighting a war and using terms like czar and so on and so forth. It really makes me not interested in this program. It sounds like old thinking to me.
I couldn't hear it, but it didn't sound flattery. What was that, Peter? It didn't come through clearly.
I'm sorry. It's a critique of the language we use, that the description of fighting a war and using czars seems to offend Catherine. Is that fair?
Yes, that's exactly it. This is, to me, sounds like old thinking.
Okay. Phil, do you have a reaction?
Well, I mean, excuse me if I didn't use the words that were right. Let me tell you what I believe this is about. I do believe this is a very important struggle because we have forces who are aligned against this change that will move us to
just
a much more sustainable economy.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I will say this. I do think there is a battle ahead.
I agree. We got a fight on our hands. Phil, I got to run. I'm out of time. Thank you very much. We'll talk again soon. Phil Angelides from the Apollo Alliance, apolloalliance.org.
Bonjour, this is Véronique Raskin, founder of the Organic Wine Company. I've created a special offer for you to try my French wines made from organically grown grapes. For a limited time, when you buy two bottles, you get one bottle free, and I'll even pay for the shipping. I know you love the taste of these handcrafted wines from my ancestors' lands, especially if you care about our planet and your health. Imagine, you can have organic French wine delivered to your door for less than $12 a bottle. I've made this free wine and free shipping offer available to you because I believe you'll become a lifelong customer once you've tasted our wines. The French Bouquet Collection at ecowine.com includes my red Chateau Véronique from Languedoc, my white Viognier, and my Blanquette de Limoux sparkling wine. All French, organically grown, and affordable.
For free delivery, click on ecowine.com/Peter B. That's ecowine.com/Peter B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
An auto bailout might happen yet.
Labor has made a tremendous amount of sacrifice in the past. Are we willing to do more? Yes, we will.
More pressure on Rod Blagojevich.
State government is paralyzed by a governor who is incapable of governing.
This is the CBS World News Roundup, late edition. I'm Bill Whitney. Michigan Governor Jennifer Granholm is encouraged after the Senate deadlocked on loan guarantees for the Detroit automakers. The Bush administration stepped in, saying it will consider other options to prevent the collapse of troubled car companies.
They are working right now on crafting a means by which this loan can get to the auto industry and get there quickly.
The most likely source of loans is the Treasury Department's TARP fund, which the administration had earlier declared off limits. UAW President Ron Gettelfinger, in an interview for the CBS Evening News, said it's totally false that the union would rather see companies collapse than take a pay cut. He says labor will make more concessions, but other parties should do the same.
We didn't see the suppliers at the table. We didn't see dealers at the table. Board members haven't been at the table. And I like to say that the UAW men and women are on third base, and the other stakeholders have not even come into the ballpark yet.
GM announced today that it will temporarily close 21 plants, cutting another 250,000 vehicles from its production schedule. Now this.
How to really stuff a stocking. Step 1, go to the Home Depot. Step 2, get a Ryobi One Plus cordless tool free, up to an $89 value, when you buy any Ryobi 18-volt combo kit for someone special on your list. Step 3, consider picking up a bigger stocking.
Great holiday offers and special buys only at the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. U.S. only through December 31st. See store for details.
Two drivers, two very different stories heading home on a dark evening.
I hit the open road.
A deer popped out of nowhere. I panicked.
I saw a deer in the road. I slowed down.
I jerked the wheel. I wish I could have seen it.
I drove around it and was home before the next song on the radio.
With Silver Star headlights from Sylvania, you'll see more of the road ahead. Remember, headlights dim over time. Replace them before you are left in the dark. Visit your automotive retailer and choose the whitest, brightest light. Silver Star headlights from Sylvania.
The governor of Illinois went to the office today while the state's attorney general went to court. WBBM Radio's Craig Delamore reports.
Illinois Attorney General Lisa Madigan says while he is facing federal corruption charges, Governor Rob Blagojevich cannot take action on state contracts, health care funding, or even appointing a new U.S. senator with any legitimacy. So she's asked the state's high court to at least temporarily force the governor to step aside.
While the legislature is scheduled to convene in special session on Monday, and I have encouraged them to move forward with impeachment proceedings, the impeachment process will take time.
The governor has maintained his innocence. His chief of staff, who was also charged, has resigned. Craig Delamore, CBS News, Chicago.
The governor's office says he signed a bill today providing insurance coverage to parents of children with autism. But despite the business-as-usual attitude, WBBM-TV reports Blagojevich is actively considering resignation. Barack Obama has ordered an internal review to see if any of his people had contact with the governor about Mr. Obama's open Senate seat. Chief of Staff Rahm Emanuel refuses to say whether he's the president-elect advisor referred to in the criminal complaint, but people familiar with the case say Emanuel is not a target of the investigation. Didn't look good for the stock market when the auto bailout failed last night, and then came that story about a $50 billion securities fraud on Wall Street. But the Dow actually gained 64 points today to finish the week at 86.29. Gary Kaltbaum is president of Kaltbaum & Associates in Orlando.
All these news events that keep coming out kind of put a block on the market, and I just think we're probably going to whittle away here, maybe go up 5%, down a few percent into the holidays, and we'll come back January and we'll know a lot more.
Retail sales fell in November for the fifth straight month, and retail analyst Candace Corlett says this could be a long-term trend.
We surveyed shoppers, and they told us they were reassessing their entire attitude towards spending.
And drivers seem to have changed their ways. Even as gasoline prices fell in October, we drove 9 billion fewer miles than in the same period last year. The price of crude oil fell nearly $2 today to $46.28 a barrel. Organized labor has scored a victory in North Carolina, the least unionized state in the nation. Workers at the Smithfield Hog Processing Plant in Tar Heel have voted to join the United Food and Commercial Workers Union. The Sago mine in West Virginia has been idle since a dozen men died in a methane gas explosion nearly 3 years ago. Today, International Coal Group announced the mine will be abandoned. You're listening to the CBS World News Roundup.
Truck on the right, no signs in sight, which lane to take, can't make mistake, which way to go, too many roads, exit almost missed, need lane assist. Get a Nuvee, change lanes with ease, with lane assist, exits you won't miss. Nuvee knows the road, knows where to go, navigation tool, even saves you fuel.
Give a Garmin, give a Garmin.
Nuvee keeps you sane, ends driving pains, Garmin.com, Garmin.com.
Give a Garmin Nuvee with lane assist.
You're a small business person, so you're the buyer, the seller, the bean counter, the chief cook, and the bottle washer. You know your best new business comes from your current customers. But what's the best way to reach them? ConstantContact.com, the easy, effective email marketing service. Constant Contact gives you professional online newsletters fast, without any technical skills. Plus, there's a free 60-day trial and plans as low as $15 a month. ConstantContact.com, the smart way to build your business.
Live from San Francisco, the Peter B. Collins Show, the antidote to right-wing talk radio. He's thoughtful, well-informed, and brings you views and voices you don't hear in the corporate media. Here's another slice of Peter B.'s America.
Those who start wars never fight them. Those who fight wars, we never like them. Those who write laws, we can't recite them. And those of us who just fight laws, we live and die them.
Hey, it's time.
But I know
They never gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never ever gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, no. Never ever gonna tell you why, no. They only wanna tell you lies, it's time. It's time to go home. To take our boys and men, to take our girls and men, to take our boys and men, to take our girls. It's time to go home. To take our boys and men, to take our girls and men.
Michael Franti and Spearhead, world beating us into this hour of the Peter B. Collins Show. It's 8 minutes after the hour. My toll-free number is 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. We scheduled this hour an interview with a Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter from the Washington Post, Steve Fenaru. His book, Big Boy Rules, is out, and it's a fascinating look at America's mercenaries fighting in Iraq. And I don't know if we have a scheduling conflict or if he is stuck in traffic because he's on his way to our secret studio. So we hope he will join us, hopefully in the next few minutes or sometime this hour. But in the meantime, you know how it works in radio. We open up the phone lines to talk with you. And if there's something that's been on your mind you wanted to call in and comment about and we haven't given you that opportunity or you just haven't been able to fit into our free speech zone schedule, give me a call right now. Lines are open at 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8377. And if Steve doesn't make it, I'll summarize some of the things in his book for you in the next few minutes, and that we can talk about anything in the news, including mercenaries and Blackwater and the Nisour Square incident or other things that may be on your mind. So feel free to participate. And my offer is still good if you call in from Boston listening on AM 1510 or anywhere in the New England area. We've got a free gift for you. It's the DVD called... I got it right here. Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies, the Clint Curtis story. And it prominently features our friend Brad Friedman, who helped break the story of Clint Curtis. Clint Curtis blew the whistle on a fellow named Tom Feeney, a Republican from Florida who came to Clint Curtis's company and said, I'm looking for some software to manipulate elections. Can you sell it to me? It's quite a story. So that DVD is available to you if you call me from New England. On 888-5-PETER-B, 888-573-8372. And Karen's on the line from Sacramento. Hi, Karen. How are you today?
Hi. Well, I hear Mr. Angelides hightailed it out of there when he heard me calling.
Oh, is that what it is?
Well, it just happens so. I am on Mr. Governor Schwarzenegger's website at gov.ca.gov, press release of October 2nd, and he says, here, Arnold Schwarzenegger today announced the availability of $40 million in job training funds aimed at helping workers gain new skills and keeping California businesses competitive. Mm-hmm. And this is all under what I had believed was the Green Jobs Training Act, passed in 2007, but I don't hear anybody talking about it.
Well, you are correct. In 2007, the Green Jobs Act, which was part of EISA, and I'm not even sure what those letters stand for, was passed, and the proposal now is to put more money into that fund. So I am guessing, and I'm only guessing here because I haven't seen the information you're talking about, that and also I'm deducing that since California is broke, that those are federal funds that Schwarzenegger is touting in an effort to try to distract us from the big budget mess in Sacramento and his inability to corral votes from his own political party.
Right, and then didn't he say the other day, wasn't there some news about maybe President-elect offering to work with Arnold and then Arnold saying, oh, no, we don't need any help?
Well, the President-elect went to the meeting of the National Governors Association, and in that meeting he talked about how he wanted to hear proposals from the governors for infrastructure projects and other financial needs that they have so that Washington can put together a package. And Schwarzenegger curiously said, we don't want the money, and I won't even try to, you know, mock his accent. He said, but we don't want the money until we get our house in order. And so I found that curious because he really needs some help from Washington to get the House in order.
You know,
and I don't see why he is, you know, tossing off this idea of a federal bailout for the states when he's on his knees. I mean, we're looking now at a $41 billion deficit by next June. And the state budget, you know, is about $120 billion a year. So that's fully a third. And that's
No time to be manly and be turning down funds that we need desperately. And you know, the other thing too is I don't think he was prepared for how right wing these people are here in Sacramento. And I have lobbied a few times, and I had it out with Senator Cox a few months ago when I went up there for the Sierra Club, and it sounded like he was trying to make some bridges, but it sounds like the people he surrounds himself with are so illiterate when it comes to at least the environment, and I can only imagine what else he is surrounding himself with around in other issues, such as the economy, that that these new green jobs are a completely new idea to the far right wing.
Mm-hmm.
It's like they haven't even had time to integrate it into thinking about it as to how positive it could be for everyone.
Well, and it appears that in a budget meeting this week, the governor alienated the two top Republicans. The assembly member is named Dave Coggill, and he came out and said that he's going to stop talking to the governor. He said, well, now if the governor calls a meeting, I'll show up. But he's saying that he'd rather try to work with his Democratic counterparts. And all of this revolves around Grover Norquist. And particularly for our listeners in New England, I want you to understand that California is on its knees because most, if not all, of the Republicans in the state legislature have taken a pledge to Grover Norquist, not to the state of California, its voters, or even the Republican subset, which, you know, you could say politically that would be wise. No, they have pledged allegiance to a nut from Washington, the guy who wants to drown government in the bathtub. And so that's why the Republicans have held firm all throughout this year as the red ink has continued to pile up. And they still maintain the posture that they will not raise any kind of taxes in any way, shape, or form. And it, you know, our state is going, you know, we're on the verge of shutting down major construction projects because there isn't cash to pay the contractors. The state treasurer and the, what's John Chang? He's the controller.
Yeah.
They both testified this week that we will run out of money by mid-February or March 1st if the Republicans don't rethink their posture and agree to some, reasonable tax increases. We can't borrow our way out of it, and I don't expect federal money to come in time. And so, really, these people have got to face reality, and we need to get Grover Norquist and string him up in a big square in Sacramento or
Is this guy still alive? In
Los Angeles and say, we won't release him until he releases the Republicans from their pledges, because this is killing California.
Well, I tell you what, Peter, Monday night we have an Obama meeting. It turns out I think Obama's going to keep his troops active. He's continuing to organize in the ranks.
Mm-hmm.
And we have 350 people showing up Monday night for an hour meeting.
That's great.
Yeah, hopefully we can turn Sacramento around because it's sad. There's some really good, smart people here. They just need a structure.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. Well, and those Obama change meetings are going on all across the country. If you go to change.gov, you can find out more information. And I'm a little dubious here about how they're going to collate the information from thousands of home meetings or town meetings across the country. But I'm glad they're doing it. It shows that some of this is going to trickle up and percolate through to the policymakers. And if it helps them establish priorities, if it helps them understand what rank-and-file voters care about in this very difficult time, then, you know, it's got to be helpful. I just hope that they really do act on it. And one of the other concerns I've had is that there are reports that some controversial topics have been scrubbed from the website and blog there at change.gov. One about taxes on oil companies, a windfall profits tax that Obama had previously supported, and the other about a call for a new investigation into 9/11. And apparently those were either redacted or edited or totally removed. And so, you know, we got to look at what they're doing and how much of this is PR and how much of it really is grassroots input to the new administration.
Absolutely. We have to be active to let them know that we're still out here and that we're waiting for these investigations.
Yeah. Karen, thank you very much. Always good to hear from you.
Yeah.
There goes Karen in Sacramento. We're going to take a break here and return. My lines are open. Doesn't look like we're going to get to talk to Steve Fenaru today, and we'll reschedule with him and his powerful book about the mercenaries, the military contractors in Iraq. So it's wide open for your comments on any topic, any viewpoint, from anywhere within the sound of my voice. Dial in right now, toll free at 888-5-PETER-B. It's 888-573-8372. We'll continue on the Peter B. Collins Show.
You're listening to KRXA 540.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a moderate dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Hi, this is Sheila Gale with The Sheila Show, Saturdays from 3 to 5. For the next few weeks, college basketball will be airing during my show. So please, if you tune in on Saturdays and hear basketball, you can hear me on Sundays from 3 to 5. The Sheila Show, where we talk about everything and help you get through life's toughest challenges. The Sheila Show, brought to you by Cornerstone Wellness Center on Cass Street in Monterey. Remember, if you tune in and hear basketball from 3 to 5 on Saturday, I'll be on Sunday, 3 to 5. The Sheila Show.
Does it seem like the service is lacking at most service stations? Not at Mid-Valley Valero & Shell on Carmel Valley Road. Mid-Valley Valero & Shell offer complete auto repair, smog inspections, major brand tires, 30, 60, and 90,000 mile service checks, complete brake work, and fix any electrical problems. They even provide environmentally friendly auto detailing. Mid-Valley Valero & Shell use only the highest quality original and aftermarket auto parts. Call Mid-Valley Valero and Shell at 831-624-0722. That's 624-0722. Remember, for all your automobile needs, only Mid-Valley Valero and Shell will do. Locally owned, Mid-Valley Valero and Shell. Putting the service back in service stations.
Solazar.
Hi, I'm Carolani.
Good Vibrations, Tools for Transformation, is being preempted by sports programming on Saturdays in December. We'll run encore presentations of some of your favorite shows on the internet. So tune in.
Good Vibrations.
Saturdays from 7 to 9 p.m.
on AM 540 KRXA.
Good afternoon. This is Hal with your KRXA traffic report on Friday, December 12th. We've got a hazard on Highway 1 northbound, just south of Reservation Road in Monterey. Slow going there. Truck that's leaving plywood behind it. In Monterey County, Esperanza Circle at Viva Lane, a collision is reported without injuries. And also in Monterey County, Folletta Road at North Alta Street, a collision slowing traffic in all directions. An animal on the road at County Road 17 and Laguna Road, also in Monterey County. Apparently, a bobcat was spied in that vicinity. Hollister-Gilroy area collision at Highway 25 and 156. intersection CHP there. And finally, in Santa Cruz, Portola Drive at 41st Avenue. Collision without further details at this time. It's cold. It's gray. It's in the low 50s throughout our listening area. Enjoy. Peter B. Collins if you're listening on the Internet.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show.
George is in the jungle, knocking on the door. Come to get your children, want to have a war. Come on. Lord, you better run. Be a long, dark night before this thing is done. Brown is in the outhouse, Katrina on the line. Go.
John Fogerty, he used to be the front man for Creedence. That one's called Long Dark Night, and he refers to the Bush era here. I'm Peter B. Collins. Lines are open if you'd like to talk with me this hour. Our guest was unable to join us, Steve Fainaru, who writes for The Washington Post, won a Pulitzer Prize for his reporting from Iraq. And I'm struck by a piece that I just pulled up during the break at crooksandliars.com. And it's a brief post here about Michael Ware, who is one of the reporters that CNN dispatched to Iraq. And this was posted by someone who uses the name Silent Patriot, who wrote, Michael Ware is easily one of the bravest and best journalists in America, so when he tells Men's Journal about how radically covering the Iraq War has changed him as a person, we should all take note. Michael Ware quoted here, I am not the same effing person. I am not the same person. I don't know how to come home. It's October, 6 months after our first meeting, and Michael Ware is at his girlfriend's apartment in New York trying to tell me why, after 6 years, he absolutely must start spending less time in Iraq. He's crying on the other end of the phone. Will I get any better, he continues. I honestly don't know. I don't know. I don't know any other way to live. And that's the perfect way to frame this book written by Steve Fainaru called Big Boy Rules. Big Boy Rules refers to the code of conduct that Blackwater, DynCorp, Triple Canopy, and more than 170 other military contractors use in Iraq. It's basically a gentleman's agreement because until the end of this year, when contractors may be subject to the jurisdiction of Iraqi courts if they break the law, they have been operating with full impunity under Paul Bremer's Order 17, which basically says they can shoot and kill anybody they want, and you can't do a damn thing about it. And that behavior is addictive. And what Fainaru writes about as he profiles some of these American mercenaries, notably a kid named John Cote from Florida. And Cote served a tour in the military, came back, and was going crazy. He was trying to take courses at the University of Florida in Gainesville. And he racked up a DUI charge, almost killed himself on a motorcycle doing it. And so he took that as the invitation to join a contractor where he got paid $7,000 a month to be a soldier in Iraq without any rules, with just the big boy rules. And what's fascinating is that Fainaru, the Washington Post reporter, develops a friendship with John Cote. And Fainaru has some of the same problems. He had covered Iraq for the Washington Post. He came back stateside to help his younger brother, who's also a journalist, who helped break the Balco story about San Francisco Giants' Barry Bonds and his alleged use of steroids and his denial of that under oath. And so it's a fascinating story, and it gets very personal about the Post reporter, Fainaru. And essentially, he became addicted to Iraq, and at one point he breaks up with his wife, and he goes back to Iraq to cover these contractors. And here's a quote from John Cote, who ultimately, as the story continues, is kidnapped by Iraqis and does not survive. I don't want to ruin it for you, but that's the outcome. And Cote is quoted as saying, this place is a money-making machine. There's just so much of it. It really amazes me, a war, how it creates money, generates it, how a war can be profited off. All you have to do is look around, the amount of food and fuel and oil and stuff that we use over here. There's so much money over here, it's effing ridiculous. All the companies that work over here are getting rich over here. Not to say that everything they do isn't needed, but I didn't notice how big it was before. And so we have developed a whole new generation of men and some women who have been sent into Bush's grisly war in Iraq and who have come back not addicted to hashish like the Russians who tried to occupy Afghanistan or opium, but addicted to violence, addicted to the thrill of killing without any consequences. And there's a legacy here. We talked to Jeremy Scahill, the reporter who works for Democracy Now! And published the definitive book about Blackwater. And while Barack Obama has made some comments about military contractors, we have no indication that the incoming administration will make any significant changes in the way Bush has used hired mercenaries, and many of them are not even Americans, to protect top officials in the war zone and to protect convoys and run interference. And this is just another ugly chapter that America will have to clean up in the coming years. And again, we're going to have to press the Obama administration to deal with these issues. We'll take a break and return. Your phone calls are welcome here at the Peter B. Collins Show. 888-5-PETER-B.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
How bad can it get? This is Dave Ross. Come on, people. Sing it with me. Some folks have this obsession with talk of a depression. Each drop on Wall Street makes you want to curse. But when your nest egg fizzles, don't be glum, just give a whistle. Cause as bad as it is now, it could get worse. So always look on the bright side of life.
This will not be a joyous season.
Oh, always look on the light side of strife.
None of us want to see them go down.
Those fellows in the Senate said Detroit could just forget it. The industry is too far gone to save. But a consensus is now forming that you won't have global warming when all of us are shivering in caves. So always look on the bright side of life. Let the CEOs who own us collect a little bonus. We're ready for whatever may occur. We'll shoot squirrels for our food. I know they're hard to chew, but they're pretty tasty once you're past the fur. So always look on the bright side of life.
Bailouts generally don't work.
Always look on the light side of strife.
I don't believe there's any cloud that hangs over me. I think there's nothing but sunshine hanging over me.
Now this.
You've got spam in your email now.
Whoa. The holiday season is here, and with it, the onslaught of email-based spam, viruses, spoofing, phishing, and spyware attacks. Keep your business safe this holiday season by installing a Barracuda Spam Firewall, the world's number one selling anti-spam solution. With no software to install and no per-user fees, it's the simplest, most cost-effective way to stop dreaded holiday spam. Call 888-ANTI-SPAM now for your free trial. 888-ANTI-SPAM, or go to Barracuda.com.
This is Dave Ross, on the web at Dave Ross.
I'm Glenn Sadowski from Optimal Health Acupuncture in Monterey. Did you know that over one-third of all Americans have tried alternative medicine for relief from chronic pain, depression, asthma, and many other disorders? That acupuncture is safe and effective and has been in use for thousands of years? Or that traditional Chinese medicine treats not only your symptoms, but the actual root causes of disease? At Optimal Health, we offer acupuncture, lymphatic, deep tissue, and hot stone massage, have a full Chinese herbal pharmacy, and for acupuncture, we accept insurance. Reclaim yourself at Optimal Health at 655-3208, where clients take a proactive role in their well-being, make informed decisions, and create healthier lifestyles. Call Optimal Health Acupuncture today at 655-3208 or on the web at OptimalHealthMonterey.com. Optimal Health, where you'll receive good medicine with great results. Think for yourself at Optimal Health.
Hi, I'm Ginger.
And I'm Jay. And we'd like to personally invite you to our family restaurant, A Pizza Paradise.
Try one of our signature pizzas or calzones, such as Jamaican Me Crazy or Wild Mushroom Dreams.
We also offer sandwiches, salads, rice plates, and irresistible homemade desserts by Ginger.
So come relax in our tropical surf-themed restaurant and top off your meal with draft beer from Kona Brewing Company, fresh brewed Hawaiian coffee, or Lappert's ice cream.
Located in the Marina Village Center at 215 Reservation Road in Marina. We have been recognized by Monterey County food critics Mike Hill and Melissa Snyder as locals' favorite, best for families, and much more.
Call 582-9149 or visit our website at apizzaparadise.net.
It's A Pizza Paradise, where your pizzas are bigger, better, and bolder.
That's 582-9149.
Stand by, friends. Here comes another segment of the Peter B. Collins Show.
Live from the left coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and be part of Peter B.'s America.
We continue on the Peter B. Collins Show, 33 minutes after the hour. We're wide open for your calls and comments here. And I just learned that our flagship radio station in Monterey has a basketball game. So that means Boston and Eureka. I'm looking to you for phone calls right now. Toll free, 888-5-PETER-B. You can call on any subject, offer any viewpoint, and you can do it from anywhere within the sound of my voice. Neil Young from a powerful CD that he released in 04 called Living with War. It also includes Let's Impeach the President. I'm Peter B. Collins, and our guest was unavailable today, Steve Fanaru. And I've got lines open if you'd like to join me. You can call me from Boston or Eureka. That's where we're live right now. And if you're listening on the weekend, drop me an email if you want to offer a comment or some input to the program. But our toll-free lines are available for you right now, 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372. 888-573-8372. I want to read you a brief passage here from Steve Fanaru's book. Again, it's called Big Boy Rules. It's about the mercenaries, the military contractors who have buttressed our forces in Iraq. And for much of the occupation of Iraq, the number of contractors, not all armed, but the number of contractors has generally been greater than the number of uniformed troops. It's up to about 190,000 right now. Many of them are not Americans. And many of them drive trucks and cook meals and clean latrines and do that sort of thing. But by some estimates, there are as many as 50,000 or more mercenaries with guns in Iraq. And this is late in the book, some honest commentary from Steve Fanaru, talking about the gentleman I told you about, the soldier named John Cote. He writes, I never really resolved the ambiguity. I liked John Cote the moment I met him, and I fell in love with his family. But it was an ugly business he had gotten himself into. Perhaps the ugliest business there was. The U.S. government had fostered it as a manifestation of our failures in Iraq, a method for shifting responsibility and hiding the human toll, the stain of original sin. Private security contracting, what a name for it. But it fit the times. For Iraq wasn't Vietnam. It was and is a war fought on the margins of our consciousness, in that faraway place where people starve and tsunamis engulf entire cities and life goes on unaltered. Unless you were there, of course. As Iraq came apart, not soon to be pieced back together, the private security contractors helped confine it to that faraway place. Tens of thousands of shadow soldiers, their roles and identities as vague as the war itself. You didn't have to draft them, or count them, or run them through Congress. You didn't even have to know who they were. Of course, there were consequences. There had to be. The Bush administration had turned over responsibility for deciding who can kill and die for our country to the likes of Eric Prince of Blackwater and Frank Picco, who ran one of the other mercenary companies. Because the mercs, the mercenaries, weren't soldiers anymore, many of them never were. They never got stop-lost or returned to duty after getting wounded or had to pull a 15-month tour or three tours. They could walk away at any time and often did, contract-hopping their way through a war and other people's nation with a gun. The money, it was always there, and that was the ultimate goal. Not peace, not victory, not a better Iraq. The money changed everything. Let's go to Joe in Brookings, Oregon now. Joe, welcome to the Peter B. Collins Show today.
Yes, I don't know if you've heard about it, about Cynthia McKinney. She wanted to visit Syria a couple weeks ago, and the State Department or somebody in the Bush administration or something, they wouldn't even let her leave the country to visit Syria. A former congresswoman, Green Party nominee for president this year, and you don't hear anything about it.
You're telling me for the first time. Where did you hear about it, Joe?
I got the information through one of my emails, you know, and that's the only way I did hear about it. You know, I don't even own a computer, so I check my emails once a week or once every 2 weeks, and that's how I found out about it. Somebody sent me an email, and I found out about it that way. I wouldn't even found out about it any other way. It was the same way when Peter Cameo died, and I found out about that the same way. The media, they never tell you anything.
Well, at least here in California, and some of our East Coast listeners might be familiar, not too familiar with Peter Cameo, but he ran on the Green Party ticket for governor and also for president or vice president a couple of years ago. And he passed away earlier this year. There was coverage in the newspapers about that. We don't do obituaries very well on radio and TV. So that I can explain a little bit. But I'm glad that you brought this up about Cynthia McKinney, because I think she should be free to travel, even to Syria, because certainly many of our elected leaders have been permitted to get visas to go there.
Yes.
And I think it is important to have dialogue with those nations. So.
Well, yes. I would like to see people call Hillary Clinton's office before she becomes a Secretary of State. There should be an investigation done about this at the very least.
Mm-hmm. All right. Thank you, Joe. Thanks for bringing that to our attention. I appreciate it. 888-5, Peter B., if you'd like to join us here. And Stephen Zunis is on the line with us. He's a professor of politics at the University of San Francisco and also contributes to Foreign Policy in Focus. Stephen, how are you today?
Oh, very good. Thank you.
Thanks for joining us here on short notice. We had a guest who didn't make it today, and you know how that happens. I wanted to talk with you about what I consider to be a very deep set of concerns about the incoming Obama administration as it relates to Afghanistan. And just on Thursday, Secretary of Defense Gates, the Republican, who Obama has announced he will hold over as Defense Secretary, he from Afghanistan announced that an additional 20,000 American troops will be inserted there over the next year or so, and that we should expect a significant occupation there for at least 3 or 4 years. And I'm very concerned about this, Stephen, and I will acknowledge that Senator Obama on Meet the Press last Sunday did recognize the difficulty of an occupation of Afghanistan. He cited the history, and I'm pleased to hear that, because you don't imagine that Bush has that same level of depth on the history of that troubled nation.
Well said.
But I'm very concerned that we are trading one bogged-down occupation in Iraq for one that could be even worse in Afghanistan.
You know, a lot of people have pointed out that Barack Obama has won by the biggest majority of any Democrat since Lyndon Johnson in 1964, and that he, like Johnson, had a very ambitious domestic plans to help particularly the underprivileged and you know, those in need. And Lyndon Johnson, of course, got bogged down in Vietnam, and that was in many ways his legacy. Not many of the very positive domestic programs that he instigated. And there's fear that Afghanistan could become Obama's Vietnam.
Mm-hmm.
And this idea that sending in more troops could somehow rectify the situation, you know, when it seems to me like pouring more fuel on the fire, the longer we've been there, the worse things become. It does raise some concerns. Now, to Obama's credit, in addition to having read the history, he does recognize that we need to take a different tack. I mean, for example, he's been very critical of the current policy, which is basically to bomb villages and have these massive counterinsurgency sweeps. Instead, he's emphasized the idea of getting special forces, small units, to center on the Taliban itself or Al-Qaeda cells and that kind of thing, and be far more discriminate in the use of military force, in other words. He's also put more emphasis on getting the Afghan government to clean up its act. I mean, one of the top people in the Afghan government, they've been recently uncovered, was responsible for the massacre of 1,000 prisoners some years ago, with the apparent knowledge of U.S. commanders. He's talking about, trying to get the warlords out there, cleaning up the corruption, so the Afghan government could be one that more people in the country feel like is worth supporting, as well as really pushing sustainable development projects, particularly in the rural areas, as an alternative to opium production, which mm-hmm. one thing is concealing the conflict. So, again, his credit, he takes a broader view, and at the same time, while it's a multifaceted approach, I'm concerned that it is he is putting too much emphasis on the military aspect.
Well, and Stephen, can we agree here, and feel free to disagree if you don't agree, but I consider Afghanistan to be ungovernable and certainly unoccupiable, because the warlords that you referred to remain very much in control of most of the country, with the exception of the capital city of Kabul, where Hamid Karzai does have some sway. But one of the goals of the American expansion of military presence there is to train up the Afghan army and police force. And I would take a dim view of the prospects of this, because I believe that the warlords who have these regional turf, the regional turf that they control, will remain in as a significant presence in Afghanistan. I don't believe that we can snuff them all out, even with massive aerial attacks and a huge military footprint.
You're certainly right about that, and this is not a kind of state that can be centralized control, whether it be under U.S. tutelage or Soviet tutelage or British tutelage or anything else. At the same time, I think that it's important to recognize warlords are not an inherent part of the Afghan society and culture. They have come to the fore not because these are necessarily traditional tribal elders or anything like that, but because they got the guns, in part as a vestige of U.S. Pro-insurgency efforts in the 1980s and counterinsurgency efforts this decade. In fact, the United States has supported warlords in many cases because they are seen as anti-Taliban, even though some of them have about as much blood on their hands as some of the worst Taliban commanders.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm hopeful that that Obama is going to shift this policy and then not support these warlords, because they're very much part of the problem. At the same time, I hope he does not assume that Afghanistan can be unified that easily, that there always is going to be a degree of decentralism, autonomy, and that certain tribal groups are going to want to do things their own way and that kind of thing. But the trick is to both keep them from being dominated by either the warlords or the Taliban. And I think, frankly, if the people of Afghanistan had their choice, they would choose neither.
Mm-hmm. And, Stephen, isn't the real flashpoint right now Pakistan and its conflict with India and the fragile new government there of Zardari and the risk that the generals in Pakistan will once again say, civilian government, step aside, we'll take over?
Yes, and unfortunately the United States has also contributed to those troubles, supporting Musharraf so long and unconditionally. These airstrikes into Pakistan seem to have, as in Afghanistan, seem to kill more civilians than al-Qaeda leaders, and has just encouraged some of the extremist forces and put the Pakistani government in an awkward position, obviously, because most Pakistanis across the religious and ideological spectrum don't like the idea of U.S. bombing. And you know, and if the government is seen as too closely allied to the United States, that hurts their credibility.
Mm-hmm.
Meanwhile, the United States has been harming both India and Pakistan. The United States has, while being obsessed about Iran's potential developing nuclear weapons someday, has broke the embargo on Pakistan and India, blocked enforcement of UN Security Council resolutions dealing with their nuclear programs, given both nuclear-capable delivery systems, and then just in late October, the Senate ratified this nuclear cooperation agreement with India,
right.
in violation of longstanding non-proliferation principles, and then we've been silent as the Indian government has increased its repression in Pakistan against a largely non-violent movement, and of course we've seen in many cases when non-violent movements are ruthlessly suppressed. That just encourages the development of more violent extremist movements, like the group that apparently was responsible for the Mumbai attacks.
The Lashkar Gang, yeah. Stephen Zunis, thank you very much for stepping in today. I really appreciate it. Good to talk with you, and we'll catch up with you again real soon.
Looking forward to it.
Stephen Zunis, professor of politics at the University of San Francisco. We'll take a break and return right here on the Peter B. Collins Show. KRXA 540, Progressive Talk for Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz.
Good afternoon. This is Hal Ginsberg with your KRXA 540 traffic report. FIA is out today. In Monterey, Highway 68, just east of Highway 1, we've got a hazard on the road. We've also got a hazard reported on Highway 1 northbound, just south of Reservation Road in Marina. There's debris on the right-hand side. And finally, Esperanza Circle at Viva Lane in Monterey County. We've got a traffic collision without reported injuries, but slow going in that vicinity. It's in the 50s throughout our listening area under cloudy skies. Enjoy Peter B. Collins coming right up on KRXA 540.
Let me tell you about Chavez Jewelry Designs in Watsonville. Have you ever noticed how significant beautiful jewelry can be? A lovely diamond ring, special necklace, sparkling earrings, or a watch can be truly meaningful. When purchasing or repairing precious memories, having a friend in the jewelry business is critical. Chavez Jewelry Designs is your friend in the jewelry business. With Chavez Jewelry Designs, you will find the best products and repair service at the lowest prices. Stop by and check out Chavez Jewelry Designs. Conveniently located at 1418 Freedom Boulevard in Watsonville's Crestview Shopping Center. Chavez Jewelry Designs is open weekdays 10 to 7. Call Chavez Jewelry Designs at 768-8004. That's 768-8004. A friend is waiting.
The holidays can be a time of hope and connection, and can bring opportunities to spend more time with friends and family. For some, this can be the most difficult time of the year. This year, think of the true spirit of the holidays and consider giving the gift of a renewed connection with someone you care about. I'm Mark LeCluse, an intern psychotherapist practicing in SoCal under the supervision of Santa Claus and Dr. Chaim Barton. I can work with you and your loved ones to resolve conflicts, improve communications, and solve problems. Together, we can turn struggles and challenges into opportunities for growth and connection this holiday season. I still have a few spaces left and would love to help. Please call one of our elves for an appointment. 831-818-4033. That's area code 831-818-4033.
The Peter B. Collins Show, up and down the left coast, and now live in Boston on AM 1510. It's good to have you with us. And Steve Fenaru has joined us. He's the Pulitzer Prize-winning reporter for the Washington Post, and his new book is really a powerful look at America's use of mercenaries, military contractors in Iraq. It's called Big Boy Rules. Steve, welcome to the show today.
Thanks for having me, Peter.
Well, it's good to have you here, and we had a little screw-up on the timing, but I'm delighted to see you, and we'll talk a little bit today, and I'll invite you back to discuss the book in greater detail.
That sounds great.
You focus a lot in the book on John Cote. He served a tour in Iraq, came back, kind of went sideways at the University of Florida, really couldn't fit back in. And then he decided, after a late-night DUI on his motorcycle, that it was time to go back. And he signed up for duty for $7,000 a month with one of these military contractor outfits. And last hour, I came across this quote, and if you want to look over here at this screen here, this is from Michael Ware, who has covered the Iraq war and occupation for CNN. He says, "I'm not the same effing person. I'm not the same person. I don't know how to come home." And as I read the book, it first applied to John Cote, and then you opened up about yourself, and it seems that you couldn't leave Iraq behind.
Yeah, I think that's I do think that that's an experience that a lot of people who go through Iraq have, whether they're contractors, whether they're soldiers, whether they're journalists. I think people who come in contact with the place, a lot of people find it very difficult to let go. I think there's something about, you know, the intensity of the experience, the way it orients your life in a way, the meaning that you feel about the work that you're doing. I think when you get back into civilian life, or at least this was my experience, that when you get back, everything seems a little bit off, that everything seems a little bit boring, frankly, and it's very difficult to replicate. Hmm. And I did try to get at that issue in the book, because I think I felt that in the end, I'm not sure what sort of preconceptions I had going in about these military contractors, but I found that many of them, like me, had this experience when they came back to the States. You know, most of them had been in the military.
Mm-hmm.
They came back to the United States, and they had a very difficult time adapting, and ultimately it caused them to return.
Yeah. And so what happened in your own life? Because there was a lot going on. Your brother, the great reporter for the San Francisco Chronicle, together with Lance Williams, broke open the story, and you're a sports writer yourself,
right,
about Barry Bonds and steroids, the Balco case, his alleged perjury, and your brother was sentenced for contempt, didn't ultimately have to serve. But at the same time, your father was dying, and you kind of said, "I'm going to Iraq." I mean,
yeah,
it's not like the Super
exactly.
Bowl. I'm going to Disneyland.
Exactly. Yeah. It's not. You know, frankly, it's not something I'm really proud of. You know, I think Iraq had a grip on me. I think that I came home from Iraq. I'd spent 14 months in Iraq in 2004 and 2005. I came home and I did have a lot going on in my life. And my brother had been sentenced to prison because of the situation, the Balco scandal. My father was dying of lung cancer, and you know, we were spending almost all of our time, you know, trying to take care of him. And really, I think when I look back on it, I look at it as, you know, as an escape, really. You know, I don't think I would have recognized it when it was happening to me. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I just looked at it. I hadn't worked in quite some time because of my father's situation, you know, for months, really. And, you know, I had this opportunity to go back for 10 days. And so I seized it. I felt like, well, I'll get some work done and then I'll, you know, I'll come back and resume taking care of my father. And of course, you know, he passed away while I was gone.
Yeah, yeah. And it damaged your marriage or ended it? I don't know the full details there.
Well, I tried not to to get too into it in the book. Mm-hmm. My marriage sort of unraveled while I was in Iraq the first time in mm-hmm. 2005.
But you're not alone in that.
No.
I mean, the damage to families by this war is extensive.
Yeah, it's significant. It's significant. And, you know, I'm not – Iraq didn't – wasn't the cause of my marriage to end. It certainly didn't help, but it wasn't the reason why my marriage ended.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think that everybody who goes through Iraq, and I include myself, you know, is affected by it. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I would agree with Mick, you know, I'm not the same person as I was when I first went to Iraq. You know, in some ways I feel like I'm a better person.
Mm.
You know, I feel like it's given me a great deal of perspective on my own life that I did not have before. It's given me a great deal of perspective on my work that I didn't have before, on my family. And, you know, and so, but I'm changed for sure.
We're going to pick up there after the break. Our guest is Pulitzer Prize winner Steve Fanaru. His book, Big Boy Rules, I recommend it, about America's mercenaries in Iraq. We'll continue after the top of the hour news here on the Peter B. Collins Show.
Are you tired of paying $100 an hour for computer support just for the prompt to return? Hi, I'm Luke Ford, founder and CEO of My Computer Works. Whenever you have a major computer catastrophe or a simple question, give my U.S.-based computer technicians a call, and they'll remotely connect your computer and fix the problem for you. It's safe, secure, and you won't have to let a stranger into your home. Call now to receive 1 month of service free with a membership. Now let's hear from some of our satisfied customers.
They cleaned up the computer, and I sat there and watched everything going on. I was just having a ball.
So the convenience of having My Computer Works connect to my computer right then, fix it for me immediately, is priceless.
I was having a lot of major problems with my computer, and they basically evaluated the computer and went through and eliminated the problems I was having.
Call My Computer Works now, toll free, 888-629-9618. That's 888-629-9618. 888-629-9618.
My Computer Works. Does your...
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself. CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. With a promise of help from the Bush administration, but no money yet, Detroit automakers are trying to make their remaining cash last as long as possible. GM has cut another 250,000 vehicles from its production plan, temporarily closing 21 plants, and Chrysler's trying to cut expenses. WWJ Radio's Jeff Gilbert has that.
Chrysler CEO Bob Nardelli sending an email to workers saying it's important to eliminate every unnecessary cost in every aspect of the business. This is Chrysler faces the real possibility of running out of money if it doesn't get help soon. Chrysler and GM saying they're encouraged by the president's willingness to look at other options for loans and say they will work with the White House on possible solutions.
The Bush administration says it wants to prevent a collapse of any car companies. It's expected to tap TARP, the Treasury Department fund originally intended to stimulate the credit markets. The Attorney General of Illinois put more pressure on Governor Rod Blagojevich today. Lisa Madigan asked the state's highest court to strip him of his power. She says he can't function under the cloud of corruption charges.
As governor, Mr. Blagojevich's duty is to do what is best for the people of the state of Illinois, not for himself.
CBS TV's WBBM in Chicago reports Blagojevich is considering resignation, perhaps sooner rather than later. Before he went to the office this morning, the governor prayed with a group of ministers at his home. One says Blagojevich told them that he's innocent and will be vindicated. New England is trying to recover from one of its worst ice storms ever, with 1.25 million homes and businesses without power. WBZ Television's Ron Sanders reports from Worcester, Massachusetts.
Totally ice-encrusted trees were common sights. Falling limbs and branches were common sounds on Worcester side streets throughout the day.
It kept us awake most of the night with the cracking and the thumps, and it hit my car. It knocked out a light post.
By daybreak, broken car windows and vehicles crushed by branches were commonplace, especially in the north and west sections of the city. Then came the chainsaws.
They'll get a workout. Officials warn that most people will spend the weekend without power. In Central Florida today, more on the discovery of what might be 3-year-old Kaylee Anthony's skeletal remains. CBS News correspondent Peter King reports.
This is part of the 911 call that sent investigators into the woods.
This is Orange County Utilities Emergency Dispatch. We found a human skull.
Oh, my gosh.
I know.
Kaylee Anthony is still jailed, charged with killing her daughter. Her attorney has asked that the defense be allowed to observe the autopsy of those remains.
For now, the defense motion is denied.
Orange County Sheriff's Deputy Carlos Padilla says the FBI will examine the remains at its lab in Quantico, Virginia.
Obviously, we want to get the positive ID as soon as possible.
He says that could take as long as 2 weeks. Investigators spent much of the day looking for more evidence in the woods. Peter King, CBS News, Orlando.
The Dow up 64 points. This is CBS News.
Hi, I'm Peyton Manning. I'm still trying to top the Gear Up with Sony HD sales event by giving away some of my gear. Hey, buddy.
Yeah?
Old socks for you, maybe?
No.
You could use a used undershirt, couldn't you?
I think I'm going to pass on that.
Oh, come on now.
Have a good game.
Well, seems like Gear Up with Sony HD is still the best thing going. Get a great deal when you buy a Sony Bravia HD TV, Blu-ray disc player, and home theater system. Now, who wants these sweaty wristbands? Any takers? Anyone?
Now through December 13th, save $500 when you purchase a qualifying 40 or 46-inch diagonal Sony Bravia HD TV, a select Sony Blu-ray disc player, and a matching Sony HTSS2300 component home theater system together. Whether you're watching the game or a movie, experience it in full HD picture and cinema quality sound. To learn how you can save up to $500 on a Sony Bravia HD TV home theater package, visit a participating Sony dealer or sony.com/HDNA.
Van Johnson, a big Hollywood star in the 1940s and 50s, died today at the age of 92. Johnson was versatile enough to star in dramas like The Caine Mutiny, comedies like The Bride Goes Wild, and musicals like Brigadoon. He sometimes worked with Mickey Rooney.
We did the human comedy together, and I knew him when he came from New York to Hollywood, and he did some wonderful pictures. He was a great dancer.
Johnson's one marriage produced a daughter and an ugly divorce. When his movie career faded, Johnson took TV roles and worked in theater.
He was a regular, wonderful gentleman, and he wasn't impressed with himself. He was a very, very nice person. A little different than happens today.
Mickey Rooney, by the way, is 88 and still performing. We caught up with him in Bristol, England, where he's appearing in a stage version of Cinderella. I'm Bill Whitney, CBS News.
How to really stuff a stocking. Step 1, go to the Home Depot. Step 2, get a Ryobi One Plus cordless tool free, up to an $89 value when you buy any Ryobi 18-volt combo kit for someone special on your list. Step 3, consider picking up a bigger stocking.
Great holiday offers and special buys only at the Home Depot. You can do it. We can help. U.S. only through December 31st. See store for details.
Two drivers, two very different stories heading home on a dark evening.
I hit the open road.
A deer popped out of nowhere. I panicked.
I saw a deer in the road. I slowed down.
I jerked the wheel. I wish I could have seen it.
I drove around it and was home before the next song on the radio.
With Silver Star headlights from Sylvania, you'll see more of the road ahead. Remember, headlights dim over time. Replace them before you are left in the dark. Visit your automotive retailer and choose the whitest, brightest light. Silver Star headlights from Sylvania.
Live from the Left Coast, it's the Peter B. Collins Show. Infused with dangerous San Francisco values like compassion, justice, and a living wage. Join the conversation toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B. And be part of Peter B.'s America.
The B does not stand for Blagojevich, and I never got any of the clear. Go ahead, decipher those and get back to me. It's the Peter B. Collins Show, beaming your way from San Francisco. And Brad Friedman will join us in our next segment. He's our usual guest at this hour to talk about election issues. And he's got an update, some promising developments for Al Franken's contested Senate vote count in Minnesota. We'll get to that in just a few minutes here on the Peter B. Collins Show. We continue with Pulitzer Prize-winning Washington Post reporter Steve Fenaru. He's the author of Big Boy Rules, and he's been on the road.
This ain't no technological breakdown.
Well, more accurately, he's been on the road from Kuwait up through Basra toward Baghdad. He covered the war and the initial occupation for the Post, and then, as he described to us in a previous segment, he went back to take a look at the contractors, the military contractors, the Hessians of this era, who are subcontracted to the State Department, to the Defense Department, and who have done a lot of the grunt work in terms of security and dealing with the insurgency in Iraq. Steve, the book is really powerful, and I want people to read it. You interweave your reporter narrative about how many contractors there are, the dizzying array of companies and how they're interconnected, and the work that's done by individual mercenaries who you profile in the book. Run off a couple of quick stats. The population of contractors, not just armed contractors, but contractors, has exceeded the number of military members in Iraq almost through the occupation, right, since 2004?
The latest count by the Congressional Budget Office is 190,000 private contractors in Iraq. And the number of troops has always sort of ranged, even after the surge, at a maximum of about 160, 165.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And how many different military contractors, armed contractor companies, are operating in Iraq or have been there since we went in?
Well, no one really knows, but the CBO figures are something on the order of about 300 companies, 310 companies, employing at minimum 25,000 hired guns. Some people feel the figure is maybe twice that, mm-hmm. up to 50,000. Some people feel like it even be more. It may even be more. You know, I usually sort of, rather than go by the government, which is never known, my rule of thumb is usually to sort of ask people who have been there for quite some time, have been in the industry, and most people think it's somewhere between 30 and 50,000.
So DynCorp, Blackwater, Triple Canopy, Crescent is one of the companies that I learned first about from your book. And many of these are politically well connected. We know Eric Prince of Blackwater has great connections to the Republican Party out of Michigan. He's an Amway heir. And so as you look at this, is this just a feeding frenzy of friends of Bush, Cheney, Rumsfeld, and the gang?
Well, I think what happened was that, the short answer to your question is I think at the top of the, you know, and sort of the top tier companies, I mean, it's sort of relative, but when you look at Blackwater, Triple Canopy, DynCorp, you know, Aegis, even some of the British companies, all of them have some kind of real connection to the administration, and they're getting the larger contracts. But I think when you look below that, and this is the thing that really, really floored me when I started to look into this, is that you have literally hundreds of companies that just sort of grew up overnight. It was just sort of pure supply and demand. There were never enough troops in Iraq. The U.S. mission needed hired guns who could provide security in all manner of different areas. And these companies, many of them simply just formed overnight to respond to that demand. So you got a company like Crescent Security Group, and there were dozens like Crescent, where basically it was little more than, you know, throwing together a sort of fleet of, you know, pickup trucks, a bunch of AK-47s, and some gung-ho guys, and, you know, you could call yourself a security company and get a lot of work, millions and millions of dollars worth of contracts in Crescent's case.
And a soldier who had worked in Iraq for $2,000 a month as a member of the Army could jump over to Blackwater or one of these other contractors and make $100,000 a year.
Yeah, easily. I mean, you had the main character in my book, John Cote. You know, as you said, he'd been in the 82nd Airborne, and when he got out as an E-5 sergeant, you know, he was making $1,900 a month, when he went back to work for Crescent, which is I refer to as the sort of, you know, Kmart of private security, you know, he's making $7,000 a month, same as a one-star general in the Army.
Now the
That's
impression,
the low end. You know, guys from Blackwater and DynCorp, those guys are making $15,000-$20,000 a month.
Sorry, the impression that I've had is that most of these, at least the Americans who are recruited into the contractors, are special forces, the best of our best, the cream of the crop. But we know that many of them are non-Americans. They're right. Foreign fighters from Peru, from South Africa, from many countries where civil wars have led to different kinds of armies or warlord groups. And you point out in the book that many of the Americans recruited didn't have any military background, and a lot of them have a background with a criminal record. You point out a guy who had a domestic violence beef here in the United States was not allowed to own or carry a gun anywhere in the U.S., and there he was packing heat in Iraq and blowing people away on a regular basis.
No, that's exactly right. I mean, he was the director of security for this company, and he had a domestic violence conviction in Michigan, and you know, not only are domestic violence offenders prohibited from carrying firearms in the United States, but that prohibition has been extended to the Defense Department. So if you're working for the Defense Department, you cannot have that and carrying a gun, you cannot have that conviction on your record. Of course, this company did not directly have a Defense Department contract, but it was working in direct support of the U.S. military and the U.S.-led coalition. That's how insane it got over there. You know, I guess I would say that most people did come out of the military. Most of the people who are working in these jobs did come out of the military. But I also agree with you that it's a misnomer that all of them are special forces, you know, very experienced operators. And all you really have to look at is the recent Blackwater Nisar Square indictments, where none of those guys were special forces operators. All of them were guys who were really just like John Cote. They had done their time in the Army. They got out, and they were working for Blackwater.
You're right about one guy. I remember he's a red-haired guy, and he claimed, well, I've worked with all the law enforcement agencies, the FBI, the CIA, the police, and he was a tow truck driver.
Yeah, exactly. He had worked in towing. He had worked with all the law enforcement agencies only in towing, and this company, Crescent Security Group, you know, he came across them when he was working as a wrecker for one of the contracting firms, KBR, and you know, he made friends with these guys and applied for a job, and they gave him a job as what he described it as a road mechanic slash shooter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Let's go to Dave in Eureka, who's got a comment for us. Dave, you're on the air with Steve Fanaru.
Yeah, Peter. Steve, I'm curious, what motivated your attachment to Iraq? Did you feel that you were part of something useful? Did you feel you were doing some good? Or was it the unlimited power and no accountability or the money? What was holding you there?
Well, you know, I was working as a journalist, and I did feel that it was the most meaningful work that I had done in my, you know, in my 20-year career. I mean, I felt like I was covering my nation's, you know, war, and that I was providing information that people, how it was being prosecuted, that people really needed. And I did feel a great deal of pride in the work that I was doing. And then but I think it's more than that for a lot of people who go to Iraq, and I would include myself. I think the intensity of it, I think the proximity to the war and living your life with that degree of intensity, I think it becomes intoxicating and people get addicted to it. And there are a lot more people who are a lot more eloquent than me who have, you know, described sort of the addiction that people get to war, Chris Hedges namely.
Yeah.
And, you know, but this was, of course, my story. So, you know, so that's how I ended up telling it in the book.
Mm-hmm. Dave, anything else?
Well, I'm gathering, Steve, that you didn't question our purpose of being there. You didn't see it as a totally dishonest involvement in a country that causes no harm.
Well, I had my own feelings about the war as an American before I went over there. I think when I got into it, my main concern was trying to describe what it looked like. And, you know, initially I was covering just the military. For the first year and a half I was there, I covered just the military. And the thing that was most striking to me, this is in late 2004 and 2005, was just the incredible disconnect between what was coming out of Washington about how the war was going and what I was seeing on the ground. You know, the Bush administration, especially back then, was consistently proposing this view of the war that we were winning, that the violence was very limited. And in fact, that was basically the opposite of what I was seeing everywhere I went in Iraq. And so I think all of the stories that I wrote were really devoted at that point to just describing the reality that I was seeing and that people were describing to me.
Dave, thanks for your call. Steve, how many contractors have been killed? How many wounded?
Yeah, we really don't know. I mean, the Defense Department doesn't keep any figures. And, you know, this is one of my main points in the book, is that I feel like the use of contractors, it really does completely obscure and hide the true cost of this war. We have no idea. When you talk about 190,000 contractors, you know, we're just now learning about these figures, and you know, nearly 6 years into the war, and you know, the only figures that we do know come through, amazingly enough, the Department of Labor, because some of these contractors have insurance under what's known as the Defense Base Act, and so when there are claims, they're made through the Department of Labor. But you know, there are many, many, many companies that don't have Defense Base Act insurance, and so it's impossible to know.
Finally, Steve, you write eloquently, and you quote a woman whose husband was serving as a contractor in Iraq, and she quizzed Bush and Rumsfeld about liability issues and what is the law, and you cite Bremer's Order 17 that gave vast immunity, and that's going to come up in the Blackwater case over in Nisour Square. But what happens January 1st when that immunity is revoked and these contractors face uncertainty in Iraqi courts if they conduct a Nisour Square event in the future?
Well, I think it'll be very interesting because, you know, I think the expectation is that the contractors are then going to be subject to Iraqi law. But in reality, I mean, I always felt like on many, many occasions, the words very seldom match the reality on the ground in Iraq.
Yeah.
And so, you know, I'm very skeptical. It seems impossible to me that a company like Blackwater would simply turn itself over to you know, the Iraqi authorities when a case like this comes up again.
Well, Steve, we'll talk again, and I really appreciate you joining me today. It's a powerful book, Big Boy Rules. Steve Fenaro has been our guest. Thank you, Steve.
Thanks, Peter. Thanks for having me.
Brad Friedman will join us next here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to the new KRXA 540.
Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 1584 Del Monte is locally owned and operated by the May family and features delicious, inexpensive Mandarin and Cantonese food prepared to order every day. The May family invites you to savor their authentic Chinese dishes and tasty soups like congee and wonton noodle. Jim's specials are still $5.75 for lunch and $6.75 for dinner per person. Stop by 1584 Del Monte or call 394-5117. Don't forget Jim's is tops for takeout and catering too. Call Jim's Restaurant in Seaside at 394-5117.
Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle all the way. Oh, the holiday season. Poinsettias, holiday bouquets, centerpieces, garland, the scent of pine and spruce. Beautiful. Nothing gets a body and the spirit more than getting flowers, unless it's giving them. Just ask the floral experts at Ferrari Florists and Gifts. Every year we're as busy as elves helping people send their happiest wishes to friends, family, and colleagues. Everybody loves a gift of flowers. We sure can work some holiday magic to spruce up your home, too.
Tis the season to send flowers and warm hearts for the holidays. Call Ferrari Florist and Gifts at 831-460-7000. Visit our website at www.ferrariflorist.com or stop by our shop at 514 Front Street, Santa Cruz. Ferrari Florist and Gifts, experts in the art of expression.
Hi, I'm Debbie LaSala from LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli at 250 Casa Verde Way in Monterey. Buy Right has been a family-owned Monterey Bay treasure since 1938. Hungry for delicious sandwiches? Join the many LaSala regulars who love our tasty, hearty sandwiches prepared with fresh-baked Palermo bread. Eat in or grab on the run at LaSala's Buy Right Market and Deli. Whatever your choice, we at LaSala's will greet you with Mon Pa hospitality and truly awesome meals. And remember, sandwich trays are also available for meetings and parties. LaSala's By Right Market and Deli is located on the west side of Highway 1, exiting at 250 Casa Verde Way and going just past the first stop sign. For more information, call 372-6824. That's 372-6824. LaSala's By Right Market and Deli, a Mon Pa treasure at your service for 70 years.
Peninsula Gem and Jewelry in Monterey is like no other store on the peninsula. 30 years family owned and operated, Peninsula Gem specializes in finished jewelry, jewelry repair, and custom design. Supplying tools and materials for the jeweler and lapidarist from precious metals to cutting materials. Check out the spectacular Monterey Jade and other collectible minerals. Great gift ideas too. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry is at 2245 North Fremont Street, right next to Big Five in Monterey. Open Tuesday through Saturday. Peninsula Gem and Jewelry.
Hey, this is Hal with your Carrick's A540 traffic report on Friday, December 12th. In Hollister-Gilroy, two reports of accidents on Highway 101 southbound. Just south of Cochrane Road, we've got a slow-moving vehicle. And on Highway 101 southbound, just north of Maston Avenue, we've got a collision. They're on the right side now. There's a rollover, so be very, very careful there. Finally, Highway 101 northbound in Monterey County at West Laurel Drive. We've got a pedestrian spied on the roadway. It's 50 throughout our listening area under cloudy, gloomy skies. Enjoy Peter B. Collins coming right up on Carrick's A540.
But a woman makes a better man.
It's the Peter B. Collins Show, 23 minutes after the hour. And every week we set aside time to talk about election issues with Brad Friedman, the citizen journalist and publisher of bradblog.com. And there's a lot to talk about, Brad. Thanks for being flexible with your schedule. We had a little bit of a shuffle here today.
Never a problem, my friend. How are you?
I'm doing okay. So tell me what the latest is from Minnesota. It appears that there's a ruling in favor of Al Franken related to some missing absentee ballots.
Yeah, a couple of rulings here, actually, and a couple of very positive rulings for Franken, and it looks like the Colma camp is increasingly desperate, according to late reports, and headed to court to pull a Florida 2000-style redux attempt to stop the counting of ballots altogether. In short here, the state canvassing board met today. The ongoing hand count continues, and they've wrapped up the ballots that they can count. Now they've got about 6,000 that are being challenged, and another 1,600 or so that were improperly rejected absentee ballots. And the Coleman camp argued they should not be counted at all. Of course, the Franken camp argued they should be counted, and the state canvassing board, which is made up of Republicans and Democrats and Independents, today decided that they that the counties can go ahead and count those 1,600 ballots, which should be very good news for Franken, who had been leading in absentee counts previously. Franken had said he's ahead by about 4 votes.
Ouch.
At last count, if you count in all of the challenged ballots that have not yet been decided.
Yeah.
But that's the way Franken sees them. If they fall the way he thinks they will, he'll win by 4. But then you've got to add in now these 1,600 approximately absentee ballots in counties around the state that should not have been rejected in the first place. So those theoretically will be counted unless Norm Coleman can stop them in court, which is what he is now headed to do. The other big decision today was the 133 ballots that were missing from a precinct in Minneapolis that were supposed to have been, that were counted on election night, but this packet of ballots has disappeared, and they've done an exhaustive search. They've been unable to find those ballots, so they have not been able to include them in the hand count. So the state canvassing board decided today that they would just use the initial counts of those ballots from election night according to the voting machine tapes. And those benefited Franken by about 47 votes. And in this race, every single vote matters. So very good news today for Al Franken in Minnesota.
And what you just said is that he currently claims a margin of 4 votes. The universe is just under 3 million votes were cast in this Senate race in Minnesota. So this is one of the razorest thin margins, and that's not even good English, that I've ever seen.
Yeah, it really is. It's unbelievably close. And even with these additional 1,600 ballots, if they in fact get counted, we're still looking at, you know, a race that's probably going to be 100 or 200 votes difference at most. But again, the Republicans pulling a page from Florida 2000, heading back to court, making up some nonsense, the same sort of nonsense they used successfully in Florida in 2000, that they can't count those ballots because there's not a uniform counting standard or some such, which is just not the case. You got a very good Secretary of State there, Mark Ritchie, and the standard for counting is quite uniform, not to mention that two of the Republicans on the state Supreme Court also happen to be on the state canvassing board, and they have already decided that these ballots can be counted. So it's looking pretty grim for Norm Coleman, even in state court.
Now, one of the other factors that favored Bush was that when they stopped counting the votes, the official tally was in favor of Bush. What would happen right now if a court ordered them to stop counting ballots? Is the official tally in favor of Franken, or still does it favor Coleman?
The current official count is Coleman by 192 votes. That's down slightly from the 251 votes at the end of the initial election night counting and canvassing. So Coleman is ahead in that count, but that does not include 6,000-something challenged ballots that aren't counted at all because they've been sent to the state canvassing board.
All right, we're going to take a break and return with his Bradness, Brad Friedman from bradblog.com. You got a question or a comment, you can bring it on toll-free. 888-5-PETER-B. That's 888-573-8372.
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
This is PWT News. We are here at the North Pole where scandal has erupted. Accusations, rumors, and all-out attacks are flying fast and furious around Santa's Toy Shop this holiday season. Can St. Nicholas himself really be guilty of sexual harassment against one of the reindeer? Look, there's Dasher. Dasher, can you comment on the scandal?
You want to comment? I got a comment. I don't know what happened. I don't know, and I don't want to know.
Can Christmas be saved in the face of these accusations?
I'm flying. I'll be leading the 8 this year, next year, every year.
And does Mrs. Claus have a drinking problem?
Lady, what the are you talking about?
Paperwing Theater Company presents the dark Christmas comedy, The Eight Reindeer Monologues, December 5th through 22nd at 320 Hoffman Avenue in Monterey. Get tickets at the door or by calling 675-0521. The Eight Reindeer Monologues is a tart alternative to candy cane Christmas cheer. Call 675-0521 to reserve tickets now. Come and see what all the eight reindeer have to say about this scandal. Call 675-0521 now.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
Central Coast Running in Santa Cruz is the number one headquarters for runners. Whether you're a novice or a serious competitor, Central Coast Running has everything you need from shoes to sportswear. Locally owned and operated by UC Santa Cruz cross-country coach Adam Booth, Central Coast Running should be your first stop before you run.
The weather can't seem to make up its mind, but I'm pretty sure the holidays are here. How's it going? This is Adam Booth, owner of Central Coast Running in Santa Cruz. If you need gift ideas for that special runner, walker, or triathlete, we've got you covered. From stocking stuffers to clothes to electronics. Don't know what running or walking shoe they want? What size they wear? Grab a CCR gift card and let them get a custom shoe fitting whenever they're ready. And don't forget about our annual holiday sale and celebration. Saturday and Sunday, December 13th and 14th. 10 to 30% off the whole store. That's right, the whole store. See you at CCR and happy running.
Central Coast Running, located in the Gateway Plaza near the corner of Highway 1 and River Street in Santa Cruz.
Time to paint your house and protect your investment.
Custom painting.
Call Don Dickman Painting for a free estimate.
Don Dickman Painting, serving Monterey Peninsula and the Big Sur Coast. Quality paint jobs and green painting solutions are fast and affordable. Call 667-2144. For a free estimate, call 667-2144. That's 667-2144. I'm Don Dickman. When quality counts, let us protect your investment. You're in good hands.
With Don Dickman Painting.
We're at www.dondickmanpainting.com.
Live, unscripted, and unrehearsed, of course. It's the unpredictable Peter B. Collins Show, originating from that dangerous liberal enclave, San Francisco.
Watch out.
Call in anytime toll-free at 1-888-5-PETER-B and add your voice to Peter B.'s America.
If you call in this hour with a question or comment about election issues, we will reward you with a DVD. It's called Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies, the Clint Curtis story.
The heart is a blue. Shoots up through the stony ground. There's no room. No space to rent in this town. You're out of luck. And the reason that you had to care, the traffic is stuck. And you're not moving anywhere. You thought you found a friend to take you out of this place. Somewhere you could land. I have in return for grace. It's a beautiful day.
There's you too, beautiful day. I'm still waiting for the formal announcement of when Bono begins his op-ed column for the New York Times. They dropped it to us about, it was back in August, that they've approached him, and I believe a deal has been struck, and I just hope he replaces Bill Kristol. That would be cool. We continue with Brad Friedman from bradblog.com, and as I mentioned, we've got the DVD of Murder, Spies, and Voting Lies, which prominently features Brad in breaking the Clint Curtis story. And if you'd like a DVD, just call in with a question or comment. And if you call in from Boston, we'll double up. We'll give you another DVD as well. I've got one more left of Burning the Future, and we also have Uncounted. We'll let you choose.
I want to talk to some of those folks in Boston, because I have yet to hear from any of those Boston callers since they've been added to the Peter B. Collins Show, so I'd love to talk to them.
All right. You've just heard that invitation. The toll-free number, 888-573-8372, and that converts to 888-5-PETER-B. Use whichever route is easier for you. Now, Brad, we were talking about the situation in Minnesota, and this is going to proceed for a while. With the risk of lawsuits from both sides, do you think that we may not have a senator anytime soon from Minnesota?
Well, where are we here? We're in mid-December now. This could go into January, and so I'm not sure. I can't remember now when they swear in the new senators, but it could go beyond that.
Senators would take office the first week of January with the new Congress.
First week of January, that's right. And they could go into the Senate under the Federal Contested Elections Act and trying to get the Senate, the what would be a strongly Democratic Senate by that point, to make the call here. So that's probably not going to help Norm Coleman. It might have helped Al Franken if he had needed to do that, but it doesn't look like they're going to. I mean, the process that is being run by Secretary of State Mark Ritchie out there is an exceedingly transparent process. There are some additional things that I would have done that I hope they learn from this time around, but it's a very open process. They've been, you know, videotaping just about everything that's going on there, putting it out on the web. You can watch all of these hearings live as they happen over at theuptake.org. And they've got very good standards and rules for dealing with all of these problems. So it could go on for a while if they, you know, wish to keep pushing it. But I don't think there's a lot of grounds here, particularly for Norm Coleman to stand on. I think if he goes to court, he's probably not going to win, at least in the state Supreme Court. Whether he decides to go to the U.S. Supreme Court, a more friendly forum perhaps, remains to be seen.
Now, what do you say we just parachute Rod Blagojevich in there and he can choose the winner?
There you go, or he can sell it. Whoever wants to buy it can win. Yeah.
Apparently somebody did, prompted by my suggestion, set up an eBay page for Senate seats. I didn't actually see it, but somebody told me about that.
Well, you know, it's funny because the Republicans have been claiming now, as you know, they even went so far, this is the National Republican Party, went so far as to set up a web page claiming that Al Franken is trying to steal the election in Minnesota. Now, they've never had any evidence for that. It's a wild-eyed conspiracy theory, but they had no trouble making that claim, nor did they have trouble making the claim that, oh, the people should decide. Al Franken better not go to court or to the Senate to have them decide it. He better let the people decide. But, of course, as soon as the numbers have turned against Norm Coleman, these guys went into court, you know, faster than you can sell an Illinois Senate seat. So, you know, they'll say anything to win. That's what they did here. That's what they're trying to do here. And they're going to use whatever they can in the courts to try to go their way. But I don't think it's going to go their way because it's a very clean process. This ain't Illinois.
Now, during the break, Brad, you tipped me off a little bit. You said, ask me about West Virginia. So, Brad, what about West Virginia?
Oh.
I know they have a lot of coal mines there and Robert Byrd Naval Base in a landlocked state.
Yeah, well, funny you should ask about West Virginia. As it turns out, you may recall prior to the general election, we had all of these reports of touchscreen voting machines that were flipping votes, and the bulk of them early on were coming out of West Virginia, where they use touchscreens across, you know, much of the entire state. Well, we finally have now a very interesting case in Tyler County, a small county, where there was a small election for Board of Commissioners, I think, county commissioners, that was challenged by one of the candidates and the local county Democratic Party. And they asked for a recount. They went in. They tried to start recounting this race, and as it turns out, according to West Virginia law, they need to count the actual paper trails that come off of these touchscreen machines made by our old friends ES&S. Yes, they're ES&S iVotronic machines, the ones that failed all over the country this year. Surprise, surprise. They were failing in West Virginia in this particular county. When they went in to try to count those paper trails, they found that, for example, in one precinct where there was just about 400 votes, three of the machines in there, the paper trails had jammed. They hundreds of votes, while they were recorded presumably by the touchscreen machines, were never recorded on these paper trails. And I've been talking to the head of the Democratic Party out there in West Virginia. She is ticked off, and she is going to be doing everything she can to use this to try to get rid of touchscreen voting in the state of West Virginia right now, because they were unable to do a proper lawful recount of this race because they had nothing to count. And incredibly, you had the Secretary of State coming in there and actually telling her, I spoke with her late this afternoon, the representative from the Secretary of State was saying, well, why are you causing a problem? Everybody else was fine. These machines, and I'm quoting, are infallible,
oh.
he told her.
The
Secretary of State. Everybody else did just fine. Why are you causing trouble here?
Oh, man.
So it's going to be an interesting couple of weeks here as things move forward. They've got a new Secretary of State coming in who is a Democrat. Not that Democrats have been that much better on this issue. But things may be changing in West Virginia, possibly for the better, and possibly due to this one small election, which you finally got a Democratic official who's standing up and saying, no, this isn't how it's supposed to work. So keep an eye on Brad Blog, of course, in the next couple of weeks as we cover this issue. I think it's going to be a very interesting turn of events. And as I always tell people, you know, it's those small issues, those small races, those local, you know, election integrity folks who find something like this, step forward, one person steps out, makes noise, and it makes a difference. And who knows? Maybe we can get rid of those crappy touchscreen machines across the entire state of West Virginia.
Well, that sounds promising. Brad Friedman with us from bradblog.com. Now, Brad, just a week ago at this time, we talked extensively with Carolyn Cernich, who is the director of voting in Humboldt County. That's where Eureka and our great listeners on KGOE are located. And what we heard was that the Voter Transparency Project conducted a parallel count, and in the end, it showed that the Diebold / Premier GEMS tabulator missed somewhere between 197 and 217 votes. And you've been looking at this more carefully, and you say that it actually shows up more flaws in the GEMS tabulator than we previously thought.
Yeah, and actually, what's interesting is it didn't miss those ballots. It actually counted those ballots. They were scanned. They were properly counted. They showed up in the reports that were printed out on Election Day or the day after Election Day, and then again on November 23rd. And then at some point, 200 ballots simply disappeared from the count. The GEMS system made by Diebold just dropped those tallies, and there's no real good explanation as to why. Now, Diebold has said, as the registrar out there, Carolyn Cernich, told us last week, that this was a problem discovered 4 years ago, that they hadn't fixed it, but that they knew why it happened. The problem is, when you look a little bit closer at their explanation, it doesn't really add up. It seems to, I mean, the reason they said that this deck of ballots would have disappeared doesn't actually appear to have happened. So it's still a bit of a mystery, but what we're seeing as we look at this thing is that the folks in Humboldt, the citizens out there, and of course I'd like to think it's because they hear the Peter B. Show and hear us talking about these issues every week, Peter.
We hope
That's
so.
Why they took action, of course.
Yes.
They got together and they created their own optical scan vote counting system made from fully open source software all the way down to the operating system. They use Linux, not Windows, as all these other private corporate systems do. And they were the ones, with their system that they wrote from scratch in just a few months, that discovered these 200 ballots missing. Had it not been for their project and their software and their off-the-shelf ballot scanners, this problem probably would have never been found, according to the way this would have worked out. In fact, Cernich went ahead and certified the results with the deleted 200 votes, 200 ballots, before the Humboldt Transparency Project found them, and she had to go back and actually recertify the election.
Mm-hmm.
All of this, to me, points out the huge scam that was the federal Help America Vote Act of 2002. It put, $3.9 billion out to states and counties to, quote-unquote, upgrade their voting system to these privatized machines made by Diebold, ESNS, Sequoia, Hardin, or Civic that we find time and again simply don't work. They spend millions of dollars. They use secret software and hardware that nobody is actually allowed to, you know, examine. And here you have a couple of folks, a couple of citizens in Humboldt County who write their own software in a matter of months, get some optical scanners off the commercial, off the shelf, and they've got a more reliable system than all of these other private companies. To me, This reveals the lie of the entire federal voting system, and I would love to see every state and county in this nation that feels they have to use op scanners to count ballots dump Diebold, dump ESNS, Sequoia, Hart InterCivic, the rest, and call up Mitch Trachtenberg in Humboldt County, who's got a free op scan system good to go, and that actually works, Peter.
Yeah, open source. Now, Brad, one other thing that Carolyn Cernich told us about was this memo that had been buried in the files from 4 years ago, where Diebold told election officials how to correct this Deck Zero anomaly. Have you delved any further into that and whether other registrars or voting officials were unaware of that fix and the memo that was sent out apparently just once?
Well, yeah, and we in fact have that memo. We posted it at bradblog.com on Monday so you can see it. It was sent, incredibly enough, it was sent via email to Cernich's predecessor. It's a very short stub of a memo that basically says, hey, we have a problem. Here's how to work around it. They don't really even explain what the problem is or why it occurs. And it was sent to her predecessor in 2004, so she had no idea about it when she came into the role she currently plays out there in Humboldt a couple of years later. Neither, and we were able to confirm this with the California Secretary of State, she, her office, Deborah Bowen's office, had no idea about this problem, despite having done a top-to-bottom review of all of the electronic voting systems when Deborah Bowen came into office back in 2007. They found all kinds of problems with these systems, but they didn't find this one. Diebold didn't bother to tell them, and the EAC, the U.S. Elections Assistance Commission, who is supposed to be, according to the Help America Vote Act, is supposed to be telling jurisdictions about these problems, they didn't bother to tell anybody about it. So if you didn't happen to be lucky enough to be running the election at the moment they sent this little email 4 years ago, you would never know about this problem. It's an absolute scandal as far as I'm concerned. And one other point, if I can, real quickly, yep. We also found that the audit logs that are printed out by the tabulators didn't record any of these deletions. In other words, it seems that these audit logs aren't really audit logs. At the end of the process, when you print out an audit log, they just print out anything, essentially, that the system remembers having done. It's unbelievable how terrible these systems are.
So that's a garbage in, extra garbage out?
Garbage that they feel like telling you about. That's really what it comes down to.
So sorted garbage.
Yeah, that's it. You know, you're supposed to record everything that happens, so if there's a problem, you can go back, you can see, hey, did someone access this system at a certain time? Well, maybe they did, maybe they won't. If the Diebold GEM system doesn't want to tell you about it, you will never know.
Brad Friedman with us. Your calls are welcome. 888-5-PETER-B. We'll continue here on the Peter B. Collins Show. You're listening to KRXA 540.
Hey, this is Hal with your last KRXA 540 traffic report for the week of December 12th. We've got only one collision left on the board. That's on Highway 101 southbound, just north of Maston Avenue, Hollis Street, Gilroy area. We reported on this before. We've got a collision. It's on the right side of the road. There's a rollover there. Looks like everything's under control. Rest of the roadways look good throughout our listening area. It is cloudy. It is overcast. It's dark. Drive carefully. Mid-50s, should get down in the 40s tonight. Enjoy your weekend. And enjoy the Peter B. Collins Show coming right up on KRXA 540. Right after Peter B., of course, it's Scott Dick with an all-new Scott Dick Show, only on AM 540.
The Carmel Valley Market is ideal for all of your grocery shopping. Carmel Valley residents can now easily access the tradition of service and quality made famous by the Higuera family at the Grove Market in Pacific Grove. The Carmel Valley Market features the finest selection of fresh local fruits and veggies, as well as a full-service old-fashioned meat counter with USDA choice cuts. And don't forget the deli, with delicious fresh sandwiches made to order. The Carmel Valley Market is located at 2 Chambers Lane, just behind Wells Fargo in Carmel Valley Village. Let the Carmel Valley Market's professional staff meet all of your grocery needs. Stop by and say hello to Ian and Gary Higuera, members of Charlie's family.
Hey, this is Tom Hartman for Dr. Daniel Turner. Do you wish your dentist listened to you? Dr. Daniel Turner has been practicing dentistry for 35 years, and he specializes in listening to his patients. For Dr. Daniel Turner, the most important aspect of good dentistry takes place before your first oral examination. He interviews every new patient so he understands what is important to you, and because Dr. Turner cares about you and your concerns and feelings, he provides outstanding care for your teeth. Dr. Turner's caring attitude and professional manner extend to his entire staff. Karen, Christy, and Nikki are always courteous and efficient. So if you're looking for a Monterey dentist who listens and who cares, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. That's 375-1112. Dr. Turner's office is conveniently located at 815 Cass Street in downtown Monterey. Parking is free and plentiful. For all your dental needs, call Dr. Daniel Turner at 375-1112. He listens. He cares.
This is for your own protection. You better make the connection.
We continue with Brad Friedman from BradBlog.com.
So you think this machine is democratic, all slick and clean and automatic, a paperless process right there on the touch screen. But you never hear the tabulator tweaking late at night after you was all sleeping. A wham, bam, scam, and the program flips it from the cane. No way.
No way.
Your own protection. You better make the connection. Cause I ain't gonna let them steal the election.
Thanks to Jesse Dian for a great tune and some good lyrics there, too. There's a reference to Brad when you get a little deeper into it. And Brad Friedman is with us from BradBlog.com, and we have Valerie on the line from Monterey with a question. Hi, Valerie. You're on the air.
Hello, Peter. Hello, Brad.
Hey, Valerie.
I do have a question about Humboldt County. I've been following that also, and what appears to me is that it proves that our California state audit doesn't work.
Well, yeah, you're right. In this case, that would not have been found by an audit. The problem wouldn't have been found by an audit because the ballots that were deleted were absentee ballots, and my understanding is that absentee ballots are not included in that 1% post-election audit that we have. And had the deleted ballots actually been from a precinct, well, you can figure out what the odds would have been, well, I guess 1 out of 100, that they would have been noticed in the post-election audit.
Right. Well, in Monterey County, what we understand is that the audit, 1% audit, includes all of the ballot tallies that were released, ballots counted, and released early Wednesday morning, the final, semi-final release of tallies. So in our case, it would include at least 20,000 absentee ballots that are pre-scanned. So it would include both precinct and absentee ballots.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that's good news if they do it. The fact of the matter is we use that word audit, post-election audit, as if it was actually an audit. It is not. It's a spot check. It is no more than that. You know, to do a proper audit, you have to, you know how many ballots are counted. You have to count unvoted ballots and everything else. I mean, it's a really haphazard way, really the equivalent of looking for a needle in a haystack, as far as I'm concerned, as far as determining whether there are problems with the election or not.
Right. Well, we agree with you, but we think that this also is a very clear example of how it doesn't work. And so we just, again, we agree with you that the audit is not the answer. And I did have a question about the 130 missing ballots in Minnesota. I'm not sure of the machines that counted those ballots. You say they were including them in the tally, But they couldn't find the ballots. The machine had counted them.
Correct. They were optical scan. It's all op scan out there, both Diebold and ESNS optical scan across the state of Minnesota. These ballots were initially counted on election night, and somehow they disappeared. They were misplaced, this packet of 131 ballots. So they are, instead of throwing out those 131 ballots, they're essentially going to go with whatever the election night totals for those ballots were.
Right. Well, I'm gathering then that you're saying that somebody did eyeball these 131 ballots from the auditing team. I mean, to me, it sounds like there's a great assumption there that they're missing and they're lost. So,
well, I don't know that they were actually eyeballed in the sense that you're referring. They were voted on. They were run through the scanner at one point. The poll books, when they counted the poll books, they found that, in fact, they should have been there, so they ended up with fewer votes than actual voters.
Okay, so they checked it in the roster, and they were able to find it. There should be those ballots are absolutely missing.
They know that they should be there, and they know that they aren't.
Right. Well, that's very helpful. I'll also mention that the EAC posted a letter from Save Elections and some of the other activists on their website, Election Assistance Commission, on Monday. And when I was reading through those letters, there was a representative for the blind community saying that their blind voters had so much difficulty using the touchscreen machines, they had to have help, which, of course, comprised their anonymity and their privacy. So just to add that to your list of issues.
All right. Valerie, all right, thank you very much. And, Brad, don't we have listeners who really pay attention to election integrity issues?
We do indeed. And, well, as I say, if it weren't for you, Humboldt would have never bothered to count those ballots up there, Peter.
All right, Brad, have a great week. We'll talk to you again next week at this time.
Thank you, my friend. Have a good one.
And visit the blog in the meantime, bradblog.com.
Happy trails to you until we meet again.
Thanks for catching the Peter B. Collins Show. Share a podcast with a friend. The link is on my homepage at peterbcollins.com.
Are you tired of paying $100 an hour for computer support just for the prompt to return? Hi, I'm Luke Ford, founder and CEO of My Computer Works. Whenever you have a major computer catastrophe or a simple question, give my U.S.-based computer technicians a call, and they'll remotely connect your computer and fix the problem for you. It's safe, secure, and you won't have to let a stranger into your home. Call now to receive 1 month of service free with a membership. Now let's hear from some of our satisfied customers.
They cleaned up the computer and I sat there and watched everything going on. I was just having a ball.
So the convenience of having My Computer Works connect to my computer right then, fix it for me immediately, is priceless.
I was having a lot of major problems with my computer, and they basically evaluated the computer and went through and eliminated the problems I was having.
Call My Computer Works now, toll free, 888-629-9618. That's 888-629-9618, 888-629-9618.
My Computer Works. Does yours?
Progressive Talk for the Monterey Bay Area. This is KRXA 540, Carmel Valley, Monterey, Salinas, and Santa Cruz. Think for yourself.
CBS News, I'm Bill Whitney. The Bush administration says it's still deciding on the best course, but it will not allow a precipitous collapse of U.S. automakers. That's what UAW President Ron Gettelfinger says would happen if the companies don't get government loans.
There's no question in my mind that if General Motors and or Chrysler goes into bankruptcy, it's all over.
He says they'd go quickly from bankruptcy to liquidation, taking their dealers and suppliers with them. The industry slowdown has already had a severe impact. CBS News correspondent Cynthia Bowers takes a look.
At this plant in Plymouth, Michigan, that makes everything from bolts to cup holders for the big three, multi-million dollar machines sit idle, barely a worker in sight.
This facility used to run 24/7. Now we are shut down.
For four generations, Wes Smith's family has been one of the biggest employers in this Detroit suburb. He once had 550 employees. Now there are 305 and dropping.
The automakers say they need $14 billion right away. There's $15 billion left in the first half of the Troubled Assets Recovery Program controlled by the Treasury Department. Lisa Madigan, the Illinois Attorney General, has asked the state Supreme Court to strip Governor Rod Blagojevich of his powers, saying he's no longer capable of performing his duties. Bob Crawford, political analyst for Chicago station WBBM, doesn't think she has a case.
I think the court is likely to say, look, a legislative remedy to removing the governor already exists, namely the impeachment process. So don't ask us to act when there's a process already in place.
Madigan argues that impeachment would take too long. WBBM-TV reports that Blagojevich is actively considering resigning, but Reverend Ira Acree didn't get that impression when he and other ministers met with the governor at his home this morning.
Somewhere in the conversation, you could sense that the governor believes that he'll be vindicated in the end.
3 years ago at the Atlanta courthouse, an accused rapist named Brian Nichols grabbed a guard's gun and fatally shot three people, including a judge. Nichols was convicted last month, but today the jury deadlocked on whether he should get the death penalty. Experts have been saying for months that this will be a bad holiday shopping season, and CBS News business reporter Alexis Christopher says it's looking more